From the rail to your radio, this is the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Homeward bound and Mucho Macho Man now kicks away from them. Mucho Macho Man starting to open up on them as they come for home. And a scintillating performance from Mucho Macho Man and Gary Stevens as they take the Grade 1 Awesome Again in effortless fashion.
See Hero, a new two-year-old star. Look at him charge into the line and then win going away by five, equaling the ancient stakes record here of 1 minute 34 and 4/5 seconds. Absolutely spectacular. See Hero wins the champagne.
Welcome to the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment and Keeneland Select.
Top of the stretch, Mirth has something left. Goes on very gamely, Elysia's World chasing with determination. And Beau Recall in the center of the course. Mirth by 2.5. Beau Recall on the outside of Elysia's World, but they're only battling for second as Mirth makes every pole a winning one in the Rodeo Drive.
But it's Gunrunner and he's opening up. Florent Giroux took a peek to his left there. Gunrunner's got a six-length lead in mid-stretch. Neolithic is next, then Rally Cry, Discreet Lover, and War Story, but they're way behind Gunrunner. Gunrunner, very impressive in the Woodward.
Now, here's Mike Penna.
What a weekend. 11 Breeders' Cup Challenge races set to come your way over the next 38 hours or so. Two at Belmont, four at Santa Anita, and five at Longchamp in France. 11 opportunities for connections to earn an automatic bid to the big dance at Del Mar in just 34 days, 7 hours, and 47 minutes. Good morning once again, everyone. Welcome to the show that launched a network. It is the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment and Keeneland Select on this Saturday morning, the first Saturday in the month of October. And it's all right here for you on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, back in the starting gate for the next 3 hours, right up until 11 a.m. Eastern, and happy to have you with me as well. When people ask me which racetrack or which race I would most like to attend that I have not had the opportunity to do so, my answer always seems to catch them off guard. I have two, but they're not the two events most people expect to hear me say. Ascot seems like it would be a lot of fun, but it's just not as high on my bucket list as these others. Dubai looks pretty cool, but again, for me, not as highly coveted as the other two. My first choice would be the Melbourne Cup in Australia. Australia itself would be off the charts, right? It would be an amazing trip. But throw in a race which dates back to 1861 and the pageantry that comes along with it, and I'm all in. Number two on my list is the Arc de Triomphe at Longchamp in France. And I just can't put my finger on exactly what it is about this race that attracts me to it. But I always find it intriguing each and every year. Maybe it's the quality of the runners that the race attracts year in and year out. Or maybe it's just the fact that, I don't know, I love a good French dip and French onion soup. I don't know. But when you look at this year's field in the Arc de Triomphe, it's pretty easy to get excited about that winning you're in, which takes place tomorrow. 15 runners, highlighted by the Godolphin pair of Adair and Hurricane Lane, and then you have the Aga Khan's superstar mare, Tarnawa. You throw in Dual Oaks winner Snowfall, and it should be one hell of a renewal. The winning you're in races here in the U.S. this weekend, well, they're not too shabby either. They're also going to offer plenty of great storylines and maybe even give us a solid indication of which horses are true contenders in the Breeders' Cup Classic division and which, at this point, are looking more like pretenders. Ironically, only one of today's big three races, which no doubt figure to produce several starters in that $6 million classic on November 6th, only one is a Breeders' Cup Challenge winning your in race. That's the Awesome Again at Santa Anita. The Woodward at Belmont and the Lucas Classic at Churchill Downs are not winning your end events. But trust me, if you win those races, you're on your way to the Breeders' Cup. Just don't have the benefit of having your fees paid. And if you're asking me which of the three is the deepest and most competitive, it would be hard to go against the Awesome Again with its three Grade 1 winners. Kentucky Derby winner Medina Spirit facing older horses for the first time after scratching out of last weekend's Pennsylvania Derby. Pacific Classic winner Tripoli and Big Cap Hero Idol, all part of that Awesome Again. The Woodward has two Grade 1 winners. You have Maxfield, who earned his Grade 1 as a two-year-old back in 2019, and Code of Honor, who actually is a two-time Grade 1 winner, taking the 2019 Travers and then the Jockey Club Gold Cup via disqualification in his next start. So the deepest prep has to be the Awesome Again. But if you're asking me which of those big three races, which figures to play into the Breeders' Cup Classic picture later today, is most likely to produce the winner of that race on November 6th, it's the one which is by far the weakest of the three later today in terms of the depth of the competition, and that's the Lucas Classic. Nick's Go is 2-5 on the morning line, and if he goes off at that price, it is an overlay against this field. If you get 2-5 on Nick's Go today, I'm telling you right now, you should probably mortgage the house, bet the farm. If you got two farms, bet them both. To steal a line from the movie Let It Ride, the only way Nick's Go loses that race today is if he's struck by lightning in the starting gate. What do you like? You like the odds on lightning? One of the great lines from one of the great horse racing movies. Nick's Go is the only Grade 1 winner in that race. And he's accomplished that feat four times in his illustrious career. Tacitus is the only other horse on the morning line below 10-1. He's 5-2, and I got news for you. Tacitus ain't beaten Nick's Go. Nice horse. I would love to own him. But is there a bigger tease in thoroughbred racing than Tacitus? And again, don't get me wrong. Tacitus is a multiple Grade 2 winner. He's banked more than $3.7 million in his career. But he's a horse who almost always gets bet down. And every time we think, okay, this is his moment, he fails to deliver. And he settles for a minor award. That's just reality. This is Nick's Go's race. And of the horses based in the eastern half of the country likely to go to the Breeders' Cup Classic, Nick's Go is the one who is best suited to be successful in Southern California. He has the speed, and he has the proven class. So that leads me now to my poll question here this morning, and you can go to @HRRN on Twitter, Horse Racing Radio Network on Facebook, to let me know your thoughts. This poll question presented by OwnerView and the Thoroughbred Owner Conference on this Saturday morning. Which of these stakes is most likely to produce the winner of the Breeders' Cup Classic? Awesome Again, the Woodward, or the Lucas Classic? Those are what I'm calling the big three, because those are the big three races playing into that classic division picture. Now, certainly a horse like Nick's Go could win the Lucas Classic and choose to go to the Dirt Mile as he did last year, try to defend his title there. But I have a feeling, and you're going to hear from Brad Cox later in the show, I have a feeling he's going to the Breeders' Cup Classic if he wins today. Which of these stakes is most likely to produce the winner of the Breeders' Cup Classic? The Awesome Again, the Woodward, or the Lucas Classic? Let me know your thoughts at HRRN on Twitter, Horse Racing Radio Network on Facebook. And again, if I'm casting my vote, it's going to the Lucas Classic just because of the presence of Nick's Go. I'm going to get you ready for all three of those races and much, much more over the course of the next 3 hours. The other topic I want to dive into this morning involves Churchill Downs Incorporated. And my question is this. Is CDI a villain or a savior to thoroughbred racing? Let me explain. So many of you following the Arlington Park news are going to think that this answer is extremely obvious. However, the reason that I posed this question this morning is because 24 hours after the Arlington announcement that the Arlington Park, that property would be sold to the NFL's Chicago Bears, CDI came out with another announcement that said it would be opening a new historical racing machine venue in downtown Louisville, which is going to feature 500 historical racing machines. And as so many of you know who have listened to this program for many, many years, the one thing we have talked about over the past couple of years when it comes to racing in Kentucky is the size of the purses, the field sizes, the strength of the racing here. The circuit is really strong, and it is because of the historical racing machines that are in place here in the state. And the revenue generated from those machines that goes back into the purses and benefits the horsemen. The venue, the new venue in downtown Louisville, is expected to create $10 to $12 million per year in additional purse money for Churchill Downs. So I ask you, is CDI a villain or a savior to thoroughbred racing? I think it's interesting, and I'm going to ask that very same question to trainer Dale Romans and turf writer Tim Wilkin coming up at the end of the program, 10:30 Eastern. I ask, they answer. That is one of several topics we will talk about coming up. It'll be interesting to hear their thoughts. And I think it's a very intriguing question. $10 to $12 million a year in additional purse money to what is already a very strong racing circuit and a very lucrative racing circuit here in the state of Kentucky. Again, that comes up 10:30 Eastern time. Here's the full guest lineup for you this morning. In just a few minutes after my first commercial break, I'll welcome Bruce Lunsford, who is the owner and the breeder of Art Collector, who goes in today's Woodward at Belmont. Brad Cox will be with me at right around 8:35 to 8:40. You want to stay tuned for that interview, talking about Nick's Go and essential quality and looking back on his champion, Monomoy Girl, who retired recently. Jim Goodman, the director of wagering development at Keeneland, will be with me at 9 o'clock to look ahead to the opening of their meet next Friday and tell you all about a brand new wager. Unsung Heroes at 9:20. I welcome Iris Siegler, a longtime handler of horses at the sales for many, many clients. It is going to be a fantastic edition of Unsung Heroes at 9:20 Eastern. 9:40, Mike Willman, the director of publicity at Santa Anita, talks about their huge day of racing. And at 10 o'clock in the room with Sean Clancy, he sits down one-on-one with Hall of Fame jockey Jose Santos. Kurt Becker's stroll through racing history comes up at 10:25. And at 10:30, it is I Ask, They Answer with Dale Romans and Tim Wilkin debating several topics in the world of thoroughbred racing. It is a very busy show. We have the poll question on our social media. Make sure you weigh in there. I'm back with Bruce Lunsford right after this on the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment and Keeneland Select on HRRN.
Watch and wager on world-class racing from Woodbine Racetrack with Thursday, Saturday, and Sunday post times at 1:10 p.m. Eastern and a Friday post time of 4:50 p.m. Eastern. Don't forget, on October 3rd, we have our Breeder Stakes for three-year-olds foaled in Canada and our Grade 3 Ontario Fashion Stakes for fillies and mares. With racing now through December 4th and plenty of weekend stakes, you are not going to want to miss out on the action at Woodbine. For more information on racing and handicapping, visit woodbine.com.
I'm here with Joe Brown Nicholson of Nicholson Insurance Agency. Joe, how do you value a horse for insurance?
Well, Mike, it's easy to value a horse when purchased out of a public auction. The insured value would simply be the auction price. But insuring homebreds can be a little more involved.
How so?
Well, factors such as a stud fee, confirmation, pedigree, sales and race records of siblings, even popularity of the stallion all come into play.
How closely do you work with owners in determining a horse's value?
Well, the owner has a pretty good idea of the horse's value, so generally it's just a matter of agreeing to the request and having the policy issued.
For all your equine and general insurance needs, including farm owners, liability, homeowners, auto, and more, contact Joe Brown Nicholson at NicholsonInsurance.com or call 859-224-7080. That's 859-224-7080. Nicholson Insurance Agency.
Vance Santa Anita's 16-day autumn meeting is underway now through October 31st. Walk-up admission is welcomed, and on Saturday, we'll have five stakes highlighted by three Breeders' Cup winning year-end qualifiers on a big 11-race card with special early first post time at 12:30. The Grade 1 $300,000 Awesome Again on Saturday will provide the winner with a fees-paid berth to the $6 million Breeders' Cup Classic in November. Also on Saturday, we'll have the Grade 1 $300,000 Rodeo Drive, as well as the Grade 2 $200,000 Santa Anita Sprint Championship, along with the Grade 2 John Henry Turf Championship and the Grade 2 City of Hope Mile. Join us for Oktoberfest on the Grandstand Apron this weekend, and we'll also have our Family Fun Zone in the infield with $5 covering parking, admission, and racing program. Again, walk-up admission is once again welcomed, and we hope to see you soon here at Spectacular Santa Anita.
When it's time to paint the fences and barns, think Farm Paint. At Farm Paint, you get the industry's best coatings and paints factory direct at low, low prices. Farm Paint is your source for quality paints, roof coatings, dustless arena footings, and more. You can purchase online or drop into a Farm Paint store near you with locations in Heart of Bluegrass Country at 700 Phillips Lane in Lexington, Kentucky, Columbus, Ohio, and Sandusky, Ohio. Buy factory direct and save at farmpaint.com. That's farmpaint.com.
Hi, this is jockey Rajiv Maharaj, and I love listening to my friends on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment and Keeneland Select.
And here's Art Collector, who comes calling for the lead. Art Collector and Sleepy Eyes Todd tries to battle on bravely. Art Collector edging clear, but Sleepy Eyes Todd is back for more. Art Collector and Sleepy Eyes Todd. Art Collector begins to edge away, and it's Art Collector in the Charlestown Classic by a length and a half. Defending champion Sleepy Eyes Todd, valiant but vanquished back in second. Then came Rushy and Restrained Vengeance in 149-1.
Welcome back to the Equine Forum, presented on this Saturday morning by our friends at Woodbine Entertainment and Keeneland Select. Of course, the Keeneland meet getting ready to kick off next Friday. Fall Stars weekend, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. Jim Goodman, who is the Director of Wagering Development at Keeneland, is going to be with me at 9 o'clock Eastern to look ahead to opening weekend, but to tell you some big news, and it involves a brand new wager for the upcoming meet. I'll talk all about that coming up to kick off hour number two. Awaiting Bruce Lunsford to join us here. Bruce is the owner and the breeder of Art Collector, who goes to the post in the Woodward later today. You just heard Paul Espinoza with the call of the Grade 2 Charlestown Classic, and Art Collector, an easy winner that day. He won by a length and a half. We were there. We brought you that coverage here on the network, and it was a very professional effort. Art Collector used that early speed to get himself in position up against a very game defending champion, Sleepy Eyes Todd, who loves that surface at Charlestown. And Art Collector put him away in deep stretch. Wasn't easy, but he was able to get by him and edge clear late for that one-and-a-half-length victory under Louis Saez. Louis is back aboard today. Hall of Fame trainer Bill Mott saddles Art Collector. And when I called Bruce yesterday and I asked him to join me here on the program, the one thing he mentioned is that this is a whole different animal. And it is. He goes from a three-turn mile-and-an-eighth race in the Charlestown Classic to now a one-turn mile-and-an-eighth at Belmont Park. Very much an elongated sprint race, if you will. But Art Collector is pretty well suited to do this. Now, he's never raced at Belmont, so he has to answer that question. How will he handle Big Sandy? But he has plenty of tactical speed. And if he uses the same strategy that we saw him use in the Alidar at Saratoga when he won that race wire to wire two starts ago, or his strategy from the Charlestown Classic, that's when Art Collector is really at his best. And yes, he has victories showing in his past performances where he comes from further back, but those were in sprint races. He's all racehorse. He's a very versatile horse. Those were in sprint races. When he stretches out and runs a route of ground, he tends to be closer to the pace, and that's when he's at his best. So that, I would imagine, that is going to be his strategy today. There is other speed in here, including the horse to his outside, Mogacha, who is a former claimer for Naipaul Chatterpaw. And Forza D'Oro on the far outside, the other Bilmont entrant in there, went to the front in the Jockey Club Gold Cup before backing up and finishing third to Max Player and Happy Saver. That was his last start. But he also has some tactical speed. I do think that Art Collector is going to find himself in a great position. If not on the lead, he is going to be very close to that lead, probably sitting second in the early going. And when you look at what Bruce Lunsford has done, and Lee, just a note back in the studio, Bruce was just calling me here, so we might want to give him another call. He's trying to get a hold of us, so we'll get a hold of Bruce, and hopefully we get him on the show here very shortly for you. But when you look at Bruce Lunsford and his history in the game, he's no stranger to being around good horses, owning good horses. Madcap Escapade back in 2004, 2005. First Samurai, another one that Bruce Lunsford owned. He's had some fantastic horses over the years. And this is just another one. And this is cool. This is a homebred. And that always means a little bit more. It's always a little extra special when you have a homebred. He campaigned the mare. This should be good today. And as I told you at the top of the show, I don't think the Woodward, even though Bruce told me this is a whole new animal going to Belmont Park and competing on this configuration as opposed to Charlestown, and that's true. That's a fact. It is. But I'm still not sold that the Woodward is the deepest of the big three prep races coming up later today. Bruce Lunsford is indeed with us now, and that was my fault. I gave Lee the wrong number for Bruce, but we have him on the line now. Bruce, good morning. My apologies. Happy to have you with me.
Okay, sounds good, Mike. How are you?
Doing very, very well. Looking forward to seeing Art Collector strut his stuff in the Woodward.
Well, it's a really strong field, even though short field. It's going to be a challenge. I hope we're up to it. He's never run a one-turn race like that. So that's the only thing that makes me a little concerned, because I don't know how they feel. But we've run two turns and three turns, so we'll see.
Yeah, a whole different animal. And I talked about that when I called you and asked you to join me here on the program. The one thing you told me is this is a whole different animal from what he faced in the Charlestown Classic. He goes from a three-turn race to a one-turn race. But even so, the competition goes up a couple of notches here. Now you're going to find out if he belongs in this upper echelon.
That's right. And, you know, there's five-year-olds in the race. He's still four-year-old. But he's acting great. He's doing great. You know, I expect him to get his best shot. And, you know, I like our jockey an awful lot. You know, I've been friends with both his agents, and he's ridden a couple of really nice races for me, and particularly with this horse.
Bruce, I was talking as we were working to get you on the line here. I was talking about the fact that not only do you own Art Collector, you are also the breeder of Art Collector, and you campaign the mare. That is always extra special, isn't it?
Yeah, it really is. And in fact, I actually campaigned the mare's mother, and it was a mare by the name of Bunting, and Bunting was the dam of Vision and Verse. So it's a deep family. I've had it for a long time.
When you go to Bilmont, and Bilmont has two horses in there, he'll saddle Art Collector, and he's also going to saddle Forza D'Oro. When you talk to Bilmont, do you say, hey, listen, come on, give me a break here. You know, just tell him to, you know, go easy with Forza D'Oro so he can have his day down the road, and we'll take care of business with Art Collector.
No, I would never do that. That's not part of the game. He was actually trying to get him out to California. to the awesome again. But it, you know, all the air traffic stuff and everything's a little complicated these days. So he just wants to give him, you know, a shot. And he, you know, he's a nice horse. I mean, he's a horse that you know, may move up off of backing up from a mile and a quarter to a mile and eighth. And you know, that's the kind of thing you do in these races. You know, I really like Shug's horse. He's giving him time off, and then the favorite's probably going to be Maxfield.
Yeah, nothing wrong with Maxfield either. He's a horse that shows up and runs his race every time. It's a deep renewal. You had choices, Bruce. You could have gone to California to the Awesome again. I guess you could have come to Churchill to the Lucas Classic, but then you hope Nick's go. Tell me about making the decision to go to the Woodward.
Well, the one thing is that he's up there already. You know, and I didn't like the idea of going across country. I mean, I think the Awesome Again is an easier spot, you know, from what I can tell. But going across country like that, and then either got to lead him out there or you turn around and go back. It was a win and you're in, which made it attractive. Whereas the Woodward is not. But here's the only thing missing in this horse's resume. And it should have been resolved, I think, in the Bluegrass, because I thought the Bluegrass was probably the best field of the year last year for three-year-olds, because it should have been a grade one, is I need to get this horse an opportunity to win a grade one.
Talk about that, Bruce. That's a great point. Why is that so important with these colts to get them to that level, to win a grade one race with them? Why is that so critical?
Well, I think it makes, unless it's a case where a horse's career ends, you know, I think it's pretty important if you want him to be a sire. And I think it makes a difference which price that, who's going to stand it, that kind of thing. I'm not really that concerned about, you know, retiring the horse, because if the horse is doing well, I'm going to run him as a 5-year-old, because I think they get even better every year. And if that's the case, it can be a lot of fun. And I'm not really I'm not in the race business necessarily to be in the mare business and the stallion business. I'm in it because I enjoy racing.
Yeah, he's Art Collector has really been through an awful lot in his career. And what I mean by that is he's changed hands quite a bit. He started his career with trainer Joe Sharp. Then he went to Tom Drury Jr. And now he's with Bill Mott. Tom Drury, of course, had him when he won the Bluegrass last year, the race you just referred to. Tell me a little bit more about that progression and where things have gone for Art Collector.
Well, you know, I had dinner last night with Tom. Eleanor and I had dinner with Tom and his daughter last night. He and I are very close. He's very involved in my horse business. And it really became more of a geographical change because, you know, New York had all the better races, and you got Saratoga, and then here you go to Belmont. And so eventually, you know, he could be back here, but Tommy's got, you know, several horses for me. In fact, you know, probably my best 2-year-old, which I sold half of to Seth Hancock, is in his hands, and he should be running by the end of the year. And he's a nice horse. He's a half brother to our collector.
Oh, wow. What's his name, Bruce?
Legionnaire.
Yeah, sure. Legionnaire. Well, it'd be nice to see him swing into action too. With Art Collector, is the plan the Breeders' Cup Classic if everything goes well in the Woodward, or would you look at maybe a race like the Dirt Mile for him?
Well, I don't think he's a mile horse. I think we found that out last year. And, you know, the problem with the mile last year, we ran in it, we got the one hole. And I probably should have scratched him after the bad experience at the Preakness, but he was training well. But, you know, once they come down on you, and plus you had Nick's go in there who went to the lead and kind of forced the issue, it just turned out to be a bad experience. And then when we brought him back, we were just going to run him 7 furlongs, not necessarily to make it. And he broke out, as you may remember, and he broke out. He really kind of gave up all chance of the race. And then he tried to get back in the race, but then it was too late. So I decided at that time he needed to change the scenery, and Tommy and I sat down and talked about it. And you know, Mott's been close to both of us for years. So we said it same to him. And, you know, Bill had the horse ready for the race at Saratoga. That was a great comeback race because it was a race that was long enough to really make sure that he was back. And then when we took him up to Charlestown, that turned out to be a great experience because the horse we beat won it last year and was in the Breeders' Cup, and that's his home track. And we were, I think we were the only horse that were there in the five races I was there. We were the only horse that wasn't on the rail that won.
That's true.
I thought it was a good race, and we did everything right. Louis really got a handle on the horse. The horse is very happy, at least when the last time I saw him, but Bill said he's doing great 2 days ago. So I just feel like we're going to really find out what we got. You know, normally horses coming back off a layoff, they kind of keep improving. And if he does, he could be a really, really difficult horse to race against.
Visiting with owner, breeder, Bruce Lunsford, art collector, going to the post in the Woodward at Belmont. If you're wondering about the post time for the Woodward, it is going to be race number 10, the post time 5:45 Eastern, so 2:45 for those of you tuned in out on the West Coast. Bruce, as we were reaching out to you, I went through some of the big names that you've had the privilege to be part of in your time in thoroughbred racing, and you mentioned earlier how much you love the sport. Madcap Escapade, First Samurai, Bel Air Beauty, Stack Deck, Tessa Blue. There are so many horses that have done so well for you. What's the Bruce Lunsford approach and philosophy to thoroughbred racing?
Well, I don't normally get too outside my my scope. I got a pretty decent plan. I try not to overpay for horses. I've really only used two farms. I mean, I've been at Claiborne for, you know, since I bought Bunning with Seth many years ago. And Claiborne's been my main standby, and then my close relationship with John Sakura. I own some mares in partnership with him. And we got one right now that won 2 weeks ago, Saturday night, you know, night racing, last race, you know. So my two best races I've run in the last month were both between 11:30 and 12. So I said, I've never raced that time in my life. So anyway, he ran a huge race, one other than at Churchill. It was very impressive the way he did it. And, we're going to kind of look for a road for him to go. His name is Runway Magic. And he kind of woke up, and Tommy had him really ready and ran a big race. So he's another hope horse we've got.
Well, Bruce, it's been quite a ride for you, and you're always so accommodating. You're always so friendly. Every time that I've had the chance to say hello to you and to speak with you at the racetrack or any type of function. And I thought it was appropriate that this week we honor you as our industry star of the week here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. And this interview is brought to our listeners by Stuart Morris, our good friend who owns a boutique and full-service bloodstock operation. And he sponsors this interview segment each week on the show, and I can't think of anybody better to honor as our industry star of the week than you, my friend. So congratulations and all the best with Art Collector.
I appreciate it, Mike, and I hope I get to talk to you some more about this horse.
Yeah, we definitely will.
This is one that you mentioned Madcap. Madcap was the best treat of my life, because when she won her second race and set the track record down in Florida, I knew she was special, and that was the first time I actually had tears in my eyes after a race, because I said, I may never see another one like this in my life. And she was really, and Frankie did such a terrific job with her. We had a lot of fun. That was great.
Yeah, it's a great game, and you can tell Bruce Lunsford has a passion for it like almost nobody else. Bruce, appreciate it, and hopefully we're talking about Art Collector again in 34 days at Del Mar.
Sounds great. Okay. Thanks so much, Mike.
See you, my friend. Bruce Lunsford here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Yeah. Good horse. Bruce Lunsford has done a lot for the sport of thoroughbred racing and is a staunch supporter. As you heard him say, he's aligned himself with wonderful people like Seth Hancock at Claiborne and John Sakura out at Hillendale, two of the premier names in thoroughbred racing and in the breeding side of things. And all the best to Bruce and to Art Collector coming up later today in that Woodward. Time now for your Lexus Legends of the Turf, brought to you every Saturday at this time by Lexus of Lexington. When I come back, we'll go down the road to the Breeders' Cup as I welcome trainer Brad Cox. This is your Lexus Legends of the Turf.
The adage that all good things are worth waiting for was never better illustrated than when Alfred G. Vanderbilt's mare Geisha dropped her one-month overdue foal on March 27, 1950. The newly arrived gray colt was by 1945 Preakness winner Polynesian and most fittingly was bemonikered Native Dancer. In an absolutely brilliant career, he won 20 of 22 races. He was endeared by the American public and affectionately referred to him as the Dancer or the Gray Ghost. Huge crowds surrounding the paddock when he raced, transfixed by the combination of a majestic bearing, icy calmness that he displayed before his races, and they rushed down to the rail to catch a glimpse of Native Dancer charging down the stretch to victory from way behind, eating up huge chunks of ground with his 29-foot stride. Native Dancer's reputation preceded him in his very first outing in April of his two-year-old season. He was sent postward a 7-5 favorite and sprinted off to a 4.5 length win, breaking his maiden. A bare 4 days later, he came back to roar to victory in the youthful stakes at odds of 4-5. Never in all the rest of his days on the racetrack did he ever go off at odds any higher. He suffered a shin injury in the youthful, but he returned to the races in superb form 4 months later at Saratoga in August. He found himself in the winner's circle in the next 7 races in a row, the highlight of that streak being equaling of the world record for 6.5 furlongs in the running of the Belmont Futurity. Ankle problems delayed his first start in his sophomore season until April at Aqueduct in the Gotham Stakes 2 weeks before the Derby. He won the Gotham by 2 and romped home in the Wood Memorial by 4.5 to thereby establish himself as the overwhelming favorite in the run for the Roses. But that early May day in 1953 was not to be his day, and the chart of that Derby tells the story. Chart caller's comment read like this. Native Dancer, roughed at the first turn by Money Broker, was eased back to secure racing room, raced wide in the run to the upper turn, saved ground entering the stretch and finished strongly, but could not overtake the winner, although probably the best. Unquote. Writer Eric Guerin blamed the roughing at the clubhouse turn for the loss. Others pointed to the suspiciously large ankles of Native Dancer. At any rate, all observers agreed that in one more stride, Dark Star's victory by a head would have been instead another victory for the Dancer. After 3 hard races in 3 weeks, conditioner Bill Winfrey may well have expected to give his spectacular gray charger respite from the racing wars, but the Dancer was shipped to New York, where he won the Withers, and on the very next weekend he was on hand in Baltimore to nail down the Preakness. That was 5 wins in 5 consecutive weekends. Well, he finally got a break before galloping off to score in the Belmont Stakes and followed that with 4 more consecutive wins. Soreness in his left forefoot prevented him from meeting the 4-year-old sensation Tom Fool in the prestigious fall handicaps, and as a result, Tom Fool was named Horse of the Year. Native Dancer continued having physical problems as a 4-year-old, going postward only 3 times, but he did win all 3. He scored in the Metropolitan and Oneonta handicaps, packing 137 pounds in the latter. They were so impressive, he was finally accorded unanimous Horse of the Year honors in 1954. Through his bloodline, Native Dancer was responsible for a raft of outstanding thoroughbreds, Kauai King, Majestic Prince, Raisin Native, Coastal, Affirmed, Exclusive Native, Genuine Risk, Ruffian, and one of the world's all-time influential sires, Northern Dancer. That, my friends, is the story of the Gray Ghost, truly a legend in thoroughbred racing.
Visionary design, visceral performance, and innovative technology. That's Lexus. When every detail, every moment, and every emotion is crafted by Lexus, it leads to amazing. This is Mike Pena, and I can tell you personally, as a Lexus owner, the enjoyment you'll experience driving any Lexus model is unparalleled. Visit Lexus of Lexington today and see what I've been talking about for over 15 years. Experience the enjoyment of Lexus and the enjoyment of shopping Lexus of Lexington. The people there truly make the difference. Long-tenured, friendly, knowledgeable team members, no pressure, no hassle. I promise, it's not your typical dealership experience. Lexus has also been a longtime supporter of the horse industry, and Lexus of Lexington continues to sponsor Keeneland's Raven Run Stakes each fall. So from one horse person to another, the next best thing to being around horses is driving a Lexus. Visit Lexus of Lexington and tell them Mike sent you.
Mark your calendars for Saturday, October 9th, as the best West Virginia breds in training take to the track for the 35th annual West Virginia Breeders Classics. The night features nine stakes races worth a total of $1 million, headlined by the $300,000 West Virginia Breeders Classic and the $175,000 Kubota Breeders Classic. It all gets started under the Saturday night lights at 7 o'clock Eastern. It's the 35th annual West Virginia Breeders Classics on Saturday, October 9th, here at Hollywood Casino at Charlestown Races.
This is Chris Landeros. You're listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment and Keeneland Select.
As they come for the quarter pole, it is Nick's Go, challenged here by Swiss Skydiver, then Maxfield. Silver State is down at the rail. The field is at the 3/16th pole. It is Nick's Go, Silver State at the rail. Maxfield looks to split horses, then the filly Swiss Skydiver. Now an eighth of a mile to the finish, and it is Nick's Go out in the middle of the track and holding on to the lead here. It's Nick's Go with a wire-to-wire victory in the 94th running of the Grade 1 Whitney. Maxfield was second, and Silver State finished third. The mile and a furlong, 1 minute, 47 and 3/5 seconds.
Welcome back. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, with you on this Saturday morning. That was John Embriel with the call of the Grade 1 Whitney at Saratoga on August 7th. It is one of four Grade 1 victories in the career of Nick's Go, who goes to the post again later today at Churchill Downs in the Lucas Classic. That is a Grade 3 at the top of the show that I feel Nick's Go is best suited of any horses competing today, east of the Mississippi, if you will. That would be the Woodward or the Lucas Classic. Best suited of any of the horses in there to compete in the Breeders' Cup again this year at Del Mar. Of course, he's the defending champion in the Breeders' Cup Dirt Mile. Last year, it was at Keeneland. But going west is a whole different animal. And quite typically, the horses based on the West Coast have an advantage. A home field advantage, if you will. Nick's Go has the speed and he has the class to be successful, even if he goes a mile and a quarter in the Breeders' Cup Classic. That Whitney win, I mean, let's face it, he got out there and set on his fractions, 46-3, 110-1, 134-4 for the mile. He finished up in 147-3, and he won by 4.5 lengths against a field that included Maxfield, who, as Bruce Lunsford told you in the previous segment, Maxfield, the likely favorite in the Woodward at Belmont. And Nick's Go handled him quite easily. If there's a chink in the armor with Nick's Go later today, it's the fact that he's never won at Churchill. He's 0-3. But I can tell you, they ain't beaten Nick's Go in the Lucas Classic today. We'll see if Brad Cox agrees. He's with me now here on the Horse Racing Radio Network as we go down the road to the Breeders' Cup.
It's time to go down the road to the Breeders' Cup.
Well, Brad, I know it's a busy day for you. Appreciate a few minutes. I know you're going to at least hope that my statement is correct when I say that they ain't beaten Nick's Go in the Lucas Classic.
Hey, good morning, Mike. Thanks for having me on. Definitely hope you're right about that.
Yeah, you know, you had options. You could have gone a several different directions with this horse. You've got the Awesome Again Stakes in Santa Anita. You could have gone out west for that. You could have stayed in New York and gone to the Woodward. You choose the Lucas Classic. You're a big fish in a small pond, if you will, as the heavy morning line favorite. Talk about that decision.
You know, we had a good summer with a good race at Prairie Meadows, and also obviously the big win in the Whitney. We thought we'd just bring him back to Churchill training for the Breeders' Cup here at Churchill, and you know, obviously the Lucas Classic is kind of a prep, it is a prep now, I think, for the Breeders' Cup Classic, and you know, we get to run him out of his own stall. He trains here, he trains well, and you know, we think it just makes the most sense with trying to get a race under his belt between the Whitney and the Classic and not, you know, overdoing it with shipping him and, you know, jumping all those hurdles. So just thought it made the most sense.
a lot of times when you see a horse of Nixco's caliber, a four-time grade one winner, compete in a grade three to get ready for his next engagement, people will say, oh, well, he needs a confidence builder. Well, he doesn't need a confidence builder. He's all confidence. But you made this same type of move, Brad, going into the Whitney, where you ran him in the grade three Cornhusker at Prairie Meadows as his prep. He dominated that race, worked out well in the Whitney.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, you know, there's such thing as, you know, giving a horse, I'm not saying giving a horse a race, but, you know, you're running them in a spot where you're, you know, hopeful everything goes well. They have a good experience. They're able to win, you know, and maybe not get to the bottom of them. You know, that's what we're looking for, you know, here before the Breeders' Cup.
I know he doesn't win every time you lead him over, but he's won six of his last eight, and he's in great form. What's it like for you to bring him over every time and pretty much know what you're going to get?
Yeah, you know, he's a horse that kind of tips his hand and lets you know he's doing well. And listen, the bottom line is I think our setback in the Saudi Cup was due to probably just back a little quick after the Pegasus and shipping around the world and one turn. And then, you know, kind of the same thing with the Met Mile. I thought, you know, kind of figured out then, you know, we figured out, you know, he needs to be around two turns. That's where he really excels. You know, but now he gives you a lot of confidence with watching him train and breeze each week and let you know that he's, you know, ready to go. You know, he's a real cool horse. I mean, he's all business. I mean, he loves to train. He loves it, but he does it, you know, well within himself. He's kind. He's not overly tough. He's tough to gallop, but like, you know, around the barn, he's a real kind horse to deal with. I mean, he's very intelligent. He knows when to turn it on and off.
I know trainers hate looking ahead. They want to look at the here and now. And, yes, he has to get by the Lucas Classic. Everything has to go well over the course of the next 34 days leading up to the Breeders' Cup. But if he takes care of business in the Lucas Classic, is the plan, Brad, the Breeders' Cup Classic or a title defense in the Breeders' Cup Dirt Mile?
No, we're totally looking at the Classic. You know, he's been there, done that with the Mile. I don't know if it enhances value or a stud fee by winning that again. And, you know, with him being able to possibly win a race like the Classic, I think, you know, it definitely enhances stud fees. So that definitely we've totally turned our attention to, you know, preparing him for the Classic.
I said earlier that of all the horses based in the eastern half of the country, the horse that's best suited to have success going out west is Nixco because he has the class and he has the speed which it takes to be successful in California. Do you agree?
I do, and I do think he'll like the layout of the Del Mar track. You know, obviously he's never been there, but, you know, it's a little bit of a shorter stretch. I do think it'll benefit a horse with his running style for sure.
He's going to take all the money. He's going to be in the spotlight. You have another horse entered in the Lucas Classic, too. That's Shared Sense. Tell me a little bit more about Shared Sense.
You know, he's doing real well, this horse. We really liked him that day at Indiana. He was training extremely well and just, you know, whatever. I mean, just didn't run as well off the layoff as we expected. He rebounded well last time and a little overnight stake at Ellis ran extremely well, received some good figures out of it. And, you know, he's going to have to step up, obviously, but, you know, they do pay for running second and third in a race. So hopefully he can, you know, get a piece of it and we'll see what happens.
You know both of your horses so well. Do you see any scenario at all where Shared Sense can run by Nixco late?
Well, no, not if Nixco runs his race. If Nixco, you know, and once again runs his race, everything goes well. No. If he doesn't stump his toe or anything, we should be fine. But you know, if something unforeseen happened, or, you know, it's definitely possible.
You're also going to saddle Plainsman in the ACAC. Tell me a little bit more about him and how he's doing.
Yeah, he's doing really well. He's a nice horse. When he was three, we had him when he was a three-year-old. Second half of his three-year-old season, strung together some wins, and he won the Discovery at the time. Joel actually rode him in the Discovery, going a mile and an eighth, and run a big race that day. And then he had some issues with his feet, and it took him he missed some time a couple of different occasions, but real hard trying horse, very consistent. And I honestly, numbers say he's in the best form of his life. So, you know, we'll see if he can step up. That's a solid race. He's going to need to step up, but I think this top effort puts him right there in the mix.
talking with trainer Brad Cox here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Brad, just a couple of minutes left. I know you've got things to get to. Essential Quality, give me a quick update on him.
Doing fantastic. He's going to breeze this morning at Churchill, and super pleased with how he's trained out of the Travers, and he'll do all his works and here at Churchill and fly out I think the Monday before the Breeders' Cup.
So the plan is to train him straight up to the Breeders' Cup now.
Yeah, for sure. That's been our plan, and that's what we're going to try to do. And I think it'll work out. He's a horse that's obviously proven it a mile and a quarter and even a mile and a half, so the distance won't be an issue. Just make sure we have him fit. I don't think that'll be a problem, and excited about giving him an opportunity against older horses.
I know you had a huge Breeders' Cup day last year, Brad, but sitting here now looking at potentially saddling the top two horses in the Breeders' Cup Classic, how cool is that?
Really cool. It's about as good as it gets. It's neat. I'm just, very thankful. Obviously I thank the owners for, giving us good horse flesh to work with and, great, great help, assistance, hot walkers, grooms, foremans, everyone that, is involved on a day-to-day basis that put us in this position to succeed. So it's been really good.
Last week you had to say goodbye to your two-time Breeders' Cup winner, champion Monomoy Girl. She is now retired. She's at Spendthrift. Boy, that had to be tough.
Yeah, it was. But, it was kind of an easy decision to make. Just wasn't happy with one morning how she cooled out of a gallop. And, x-rays revealed something very minor that, would need time. And, it's an easy decision to make. So, excited actually to, see her go home, make babies, and excited to see that first in the mischief.
You can see why he's a champion trainer, can't you? Brad Cox here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Brad, listen, go get your work done. Appreciate a few minutes, and good luck down the road to the Breeders' Cup. I'm sure we'll talk again.
Thanks, Mike. Talk to you soon.
All right, Brad Cox here on HRN. Yeah, I mean, so sharp, right? I mean, you look at the success that Brad Cox has had in his career, but certainly in recent years, it's just gone to a whole new level for him. 1,670 plus winners. I think it's like 1674 or something like that, maybe even higher than that number. But he's had a lot of success. He's having another big year. And he's sitting here now, 34 days away from the Breeders' Cup, with Nixco and with Essential Quality. Those are the two horses that most people feel could be the favorite and the second choice in some order in the Classic. So cool. Really happy for Brad. Super nice guy. And good luck to him as he makes his way down the road to the Breeders' Cup. Going to get to another break. I'll come back, get you set for hour number two, and tell you what's ahead for the rest of the program. This is the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
McKinsey, new for 2021 at Gainesway. The son of Kentucky Derby winner Street Sense, McKinsey was named a TDN Rising Star following his five-length debut victory at Santa Anita and was an undefeated Grade 1 winning two-year-old, the fastest juvenile of 2017. McKinsey scored four Grade 1 victories in his career with Grade 1 wins at 2, 3, and 4.
Furlong to go. McKinsey is in front. Axelrod set down by Joe Bravo. Mike Smith working on McKinsey. McKinsey holding on. Axelrod is full out. McKinsey is clear as they come down to the finish. Baffert, Smith, McKinsey, they've done it. McKinsey has it by two.
Coming to the final furlong, McKinsey's in front. Yoshida runs after him on the outside. Vino Rosso is third. McKinsey comes by the 16th pole, and he's going to do it. McKinsey has won the Whitney.
11 triple-digit buyer speed figures. Earnings over $3.4 million. McKinsey standing at Gainesway.
Woodford Feed, where tradition merges with technology. Family-owned since 1940 and providing exceptional customer service, Woodford Feed specializes in the highest quality feed, using only the finest ingredients to ensure optimal nutrition for your horses. In addition, Woodford Feed can help with all your farm needs, including field seed, fertilizer, and weed control. So whether your horse is sprinting around the racetrack or has a foal by her side, count on Woodford Feed to provide the quality nutrition necessary to perform at the highest level. Woodford Feed, Versailles, Kentucky.
Hi, Tony.
Hey, Matthew.
There's a reason why Tony's Steaks and Seafood is my favorite restaurant. It's because I want to feel part of the family. Isn't that right, Tony?
That's right. There's a saying on the wall that I truly believe in. There's always room for one more at our table. We just want you to be part of our family.
And believe me, you will be. It's Tony Steaks and Seafood right across from Triangle Park. Visit them at TonySteaksAndSeafood.com.
We have the world at our fingertips. Inspiration in our touch and power in our hands. Our hands. Gentle enough to hold the next generation, yet strong enough to build movements that can change the world. Our hands can build relationships, frame ideas, and empower communities. We have the ability to share and imagine, create and comfort, love and heal the world around us. And it doesn't stop there. Right here, in our hands, we have the power to save a life. If you see a teen or adult suddenly collapse, call 911 and push hard and fast in the center of the chest. The power is in your hands. Anthem Foundation is the proud national supporter of the American Heart Association's Hands Only CPR campaign.
This is Greg Foley, and you're listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment and Keeneland Select.
Travel Column now moves up to challenge for that second spot. Looks for a little more running room as they move by the quarter pole to the top of the short stretch. A gap of five more lengths. Thoughtfully is back there in fourth. Extrema is fifth. And Simply Ravishing still the leader. Simply Ravishing, a four-length lead, moving into the final furlong. Now it's out to five. Travel Column is in a tussle for that second spot, along with Crazy Beautiful. Well behind Simply Ravishing. Luis Saez aboard. It is all Simply Ravishing in the Darley Alcibiades. Opened up and won it by seven. Then it was Crazy Beautiful home second. Travel Column was third. 1:43.58.
That's Kurt Becker with the call of last year's Darley Alcibiades, the traditional opening feature to Fall Stars weekend. Of course, that comes your way next Friday at Keeneland. Ken McPeak settled Simply Ravishing. That was his fifth win in the Darley Alcibiades. He has had so much success in that race. It is so good to him. He loves it. Not sure if he'll have a filly in it this year. I'd have to think he may. If he wins it again this year, if he does have a filly in there and he wins it, he will equal Dwayne Lucas at the top of the list. Dwayne has settled six winners in the Alcibiades. Kenny would equal him with a sixth victory coming up next Friday. If indeed he does have a horse entered, they'll take entries, I believe, on Tuesday for that Friday program. So get ready to handicap. Jim Goodman is the Director of Wagering Development at Keeneland. He's going to be with me in just a couple of minutes to kick off hour number two, and he'll tell you all about opening weekend. He'll also fill you in on a brand new wager, which is going to be really, really cool. It's a $3 wager. Going to be very interesting to see how that plays out, but Jim will give you all the details coming up shortly. Unsung Heroes presented by Claiborne coming up at 9:20. I welcome Iris Siegler, who is a handler at the sales. It's a very unique job, very important job in thoroughbred racing, and those folks don't often find themselves in the spotlight. So I will recognize Iris coming up at 9:20. 9:40, Mike Willman, the director of publicity at Santa Anita, will fill you in on their big Saturday program. At 10 o'clock, in the room with Sean Clancy, his one-on-one conversation with retired Hall of Fame jockey Jose Santos. 10:25, Kurt Becker takes you on a stroll through racing history. And then at the end of the show, right around 10:30 Eastern, I ask, they answer. That's what trainer Dale Romans and turf writer Tim Wilkin. We will debate several topics, including the question I asked at the beginning of the show. Is Churchill Downs Incorporated a friend or foe to thoroughbred racing? Are they a villain or are they a savior? We're going to debate that. I think it's an interesting question based on a couple of announcements that came out from CDI this past week. Don't forget, too, that if you are going to be in the central Kentucky area and you are an outdoorsman, an outdoorswoman who enjoys hunting, fishing, whatever it might be, check out Whitetail Heaven Outfitters, their elite outdoor superstore in Nicholasville, Kentucky. They are just 3 miles south of the Fayette Mall on Nicholasville Road, and the store is owned by former horse trainer Tevis McCauley. And the Elite Outdoor Superstore really does has everything you need for hunting deer, turkey, ducks, so much more. They even have two indoor archery ranges. So stop in and see them today. It's the Whitetail Heaven Outfitters Elite Outdoor Superstore in Nicholasville, Kentucky. You won't be disappointed. You can talk to Tevis about horse racing. Talk to him about being out in the outdoors and some of those things that you enjoy, too. The Whitetail Heaven Outfitters Elite Outdoor Superstore in Nicholasville, Kentucky. All right, I'm back with hour number two. Kicks off with Jim Goodman from Keeneland right after I pause 10 seconds for station identification. This is the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment and Keeneland Select.
Welcome back. Very busy program. If you missed any of the first hour of the program, my interview with this week's Industry Star of the Week, presented by Stuart Morris, that was Bruce Lunsford, the owner and breeder of Art Collector in today's Woodward, and my conversation going down the road to the Breeders' Cup with trainer Brad Cox. If you missed any of those, any portion of those interviews, you can head back to our website, horseracingradio.net. You can listen to the podcast at your leisure. I mentioned the fact that we are edging ever closer to the Breeders' Cup World Championships, now just 34 days, 6 hours, 48 minutes away. We're going to be there all week long as your exclusive radio home of the Breeders' Cup. The only place you'll hear the Breeders' Cup on radio is with us, myself, Kurt Becker, Bobby Newman, Jude Feld. We'll all be together again to bring you that exclusive coverage all week long. We kick it off with our Breeders' Cup countdown shows on Tuesday morning, live from Del Mar. That's 8 to 10 Pacific, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Eastern Time, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday morning. And on Friday, we segue into coverage of all the big races. You'll hear every Breeders' Cup race Friday and Saturday on radio, right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Proud and privileged to be doing that again. We've been doing it every year since 2007, and it is quite an honor to be able to bring you that coverage here on HRRN. Huge weekend in the Bluegrass kicks off next Friday. It is Fall Stars weekend, the opening of the fall meet at Keeneland, always front-loaded because of the Breeders' Cup, and boy, is it ever. 10 stakes races on opening weekend. That's between Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. 9 of those races are graded. 8 of the graded stakes are winning your ins. Does it get any better than that? I think not. And I'm sure Jim Goodman would agree. He is the Director of Wagering Development at Keeneland. He is with me now. Jim, good morning.
Good morning, Michael. How are you today?
Doing very well, my friend, and excited for things to come next weekend. Of course, it's a big weekend all over the country later today and tomorrow, but boy, what a weekend it's going to be at Keeneland, and if the weather holds up, it'll be jam-packed, won't it?
Well, I think it will be. We're actually limiting attendance a little bit, so
okay.
if you're listening, you need to, we'll go through this a little bit more in detail, but you need to make sure you get your tickets in advance, because we are going to limit general admission. We put that out this week. But we're expecting a big crowd anyway, somewhere over 20,000. Got LSU coming in for a Saturday football game, and hopefully good weather. And you can't beat the racing. In your intro, I heard you brag about all our winning your in races and our grade ones, and it's just a wonderful weekend. And fall in the Bluegrass, it can't get any better than that.
And you get a chance to roll out a brand new wager this meet, too. Tell me about that.
We do. I was thinking about this pre-pandemic, and it got put on hold last year, but we're doing what we're calling the Keeneland Turf Pick 3. And very simply, it's a Pick 3 wager, same rules as always, but a couple of twists. And one twist is it's going to be in the last 3 turf races of each day. So there are a couple of days that we could have 4 turf races carded if we split a maiden special weight. So it'll always be in the last 3 of each day. It will be a $3 minimum wager. We have had a lot of horse players want to try out higher minimum wagers. And the success of the Golden Hour wagers out west has kind of encouraged me to try this one. It's going to be wagering. You've got to go to your ADW, or if you're at a self-serve machine or with a clerk, you've got to ask for this as a separate event, because the tote system won't allow us to do a pick three with a 50-cent minimum and a pick three starting the same race with a $3 minimum. So that's going to be a little bit of a hassle for you. But if you can get past that, it's going to be a great wager. I mean, our turf races are incredible. You know, full fields, very competitive, horses coming from all over the country. And I think it's an exciting wager, especially for the big players that think maybe the 50-cent minimum has diluted the payoffs in the past few years. So we're trying this, and hopefully people will really enjoy it.
What is the proper way to ask for this wager, Jim? Just Keeneland Turf Pick 3?
That's correct. That's absolutely correct. That's the way we're going to name it in the system. The self-serve machines here at Keeneland will say probably KEE Turf Pick 3. That's kind of abbreviated a little bit. On your ADW, it should appear just below where the Keeneland race, let's say it starts on race 5 on opening day. So Keeneland race 5 at 12 minutes to post, and it should appear on your ADW screen on your smartphone or on your PC as right below that if you've got it minutes to post as the Keeneland Turf Pick 3. Similar to what the cross country is right now, people are accustomed to betting that cross country as a separate event. So it's the same way of looking at it from the tote system. We're also going to have Equibase is going to have a separate file each day for those three races. We'll put it in program information, the leg A of the Keeneland Turf Pick 3. So we're going to do our best to get people's eyeballs on those races and encourage them to look for that wager.
Yeah, it's a great wager. It's a great idea, especially for somebody like myself who loves turf racing. This ties into three turf races. Again, the last three turf races of the day. It's a brand new wager at Keeneland, the Keeneland Turf Pick 3, $3 minimum, 15% takeout. Jim, what's the normal takeout on a traditional pick 3?
22%.
Okay.
We do a 15% takeout on our pick 5, and it's grown exponentially over the past few years. We wanted to do something for the players. A lot of tracks get hassled because we're not good for the horse players. We think Keeneland is good for the horse players. We try to do the best we can from a takeout standpoint. So it's going to be a really great wager. And I don't think we did a little research. I don't think anybody else has done this. So I really feel good about us coming up with this idea and giving it a shot. And hopefully it's going to be pretty cool.
How will it work, Jim, if let's say somebody puts their wager in on the Keeneland Turf Pick 3 and the first race goes without issue, the second race goes without issue, the third and final leg of it in the Pick 3, we get a deluge of rain, the race is taken off the turf, there are scratches. How will that work with the rules of this new wager?
Okay, in the Pick 3 wager, it's a little bit different than the Pick 4. When it's taken off the turf, you do get an all-win situation. So let's say you've got the first two legs in, and you have 12 horses running in that last leg. So you get an all-win situation with the horses that actually run in the last leg. So, for example, if you had six of those horses that run and six of them that scratch, your payoff would be six times what the payoff is for two out of three plus the all win, but you'll also get a consolation payoff for those horses that scratched out of the final leg.
Gotcha. Okay. All right. Interesting stuff. Talking with Jim Goodman, who is the director of wagering development at Keeneland. Jim, that is not the only, well, it's the only new wager, but you're also making some tweaks to the Super High Five, which is kind of interesting too. Tell me about that.
We are. We instituted the Super High Five as a jackpot wager in 2020 at the request of Breeders' Cup. And it's a big deal for Breeders' Cup weekend because you've got all these great races back-to-back. And with carryovers and with a jackpot component, you can have some really big payoffs. And I think we had a $300,000 payoff in 2020. We don't feel that jackpot wagers are beneficial to the horse player except for on payoff days, on mandatory payout days. So we wanted to do this Super High Five a little bit differently. So we're raising the minimum to a dollar, and we're only doing it on the last race of the day. I don't like horse players chasing a jackpot throughout the day on 9 or 10 consecutive races. That hurts everybody. That hurts the horse player that's playing into an onerous takeout level, and it hurts our churn because you've got people that are tying up money in a wager that is not paying off as frequently as you would like for it to. So we just changed it around. Last race of the day, Super I-5, as long as there's at least 7 wagering interests, does have a full carryover component. So it could carry over 100% to the next day's race, but there is no jackpot component anymore. I also want to mention we've got another new wager that I didn't talk to you about prior to this, but I know that you're familiar with it because it's actually opening up this weekend at Santa Anita. And that's the Breeders' Cup Winning Your End Fix 6 that's sponsored through NYRA.
Yep.
And NYRA is using it this weekend with the Santa Anita races. And we're going to do that next weekend with our Winning Your End. There will be probably 4 races from Kingland and 2 races from Belmont over the 2 days of next weekend.
You know, it's so fascinating to hear you talk about what goes into these different wagers, that kind of the thought process behind it, Jim. And when you and the team sit down and you start saying, okay, we want to look at a new wager that will help us do this or will help horse players in this regard, take me through some of the, not necessarily the conversations, but the thought process and the logic in putting together a new wager and some of the key things that you try to keep in mind as you do so.
Well, obviously, we want to make the takeout as attractive as possible. In a new wager, I think you want to make it where an average horse player can win. And that benefits the horse player who's got more money in his or her pocket, but it also benefits the racetrack because of the churn factor. So I'll give you an example of what we don't want to do at Kingland. I had a person that called me a few years ago that wanted to do a place pick all at Kingland. It's just my opinion, and that's for whatever that's worth. But a place pick all is a terrible wager for the track, and I think for the player, because you've got to pick all 10 races or all 9 races. And it sounds easy. It's not easy to hit at all. And you come to the racetrack with $500 in your pocket, and you put $100 into a place pick all in the first race. Just think of what that does to the racetrack, because you've got that $100 tied up all day long. Instead of taking that $100 and betting a $10 exacta box in the first race and hitting it, or a $10 daily double and hitting it.
Yep.
And then you've got more money in your pocket, which actually helps the racetrack because you're going to bet more money if you win the first couple races. That's what we think about, and that's why the pick 3 was probably one of the things that we talked about. Was a pick 3 is easier to hit than a pick 4, pick 5, or pick 6. It's very tough, however, to hit the turf races. So when we came up with this wager, we wanted something unique. We wanted something that potentially could have a big payoff, but we also wanted something that could churn money a little bit, because if you think about it, if you get chalky in a pick 3 and it pays $20 for a thing for a dollar, it's going to pay $60 for a $3 wager. That's not bad return.
Yeah.
So that's what goes into the thought process. It's tough to come up with new wagers. And I think if you ask some of the people that have wagers that have failed in the past, I'm sure that somebody sat in a room and thought the roulette wager at the Stronach tracks was going to be a really good idea. Nobody liked it. You know, it just flopped. And this one, I think, is going to be more successful. We don't want to have wagers that people just say, well, that's crazy. You don't want something, to me, with a 40% effective takeout that's a jackpot wager that's only going to pay somebody realistically when there's a mandatory payout day. That's just how we feel about it.
And then you have to weigh trying to balance your wagers to be attractive to a small bettor that's there just hanging out, throwing a few bucks through the windows, and your bigger players too, right? You don't want to alienate them, so you've got to kind of find that balance somewhere in between.
And that's why, as the years have gone by and the minimum wagers have decreased, a 10-cent super, a 50-cent try, a 50-cent pick 4 and pick 5, that does appeal to the small player. It doesn't appeal to the big player because it does dilute their opportunity to get a big play, a big payoff. So that's why maybe as we talk about tweaking wagers, we go back to a higher minimum for a wager like this pick three. The regular player can still play a pick three starting in the fifth race at Keeneland for 50 cents. But if they want to do a $3 minimum, try to get a bigger play, that gives them the option. And I think you can always – players like options, and that's something that I would never at Keeneland limit our wagering menu to only a few wagers. I want to offer something for everybody.
The other thing, Jim, that you've always been very passionate about and very successful with at Keeneland is your – different contests that you'll run throughout the meet and then even away from the meet, but certainly during the meet, you have several contests going on. Tell me about what folks can expect there.
We do. We're going to reinstitute our Wednesday tournaments. We didn't do them during pandemic because we had limited attendance and it wasn't fair for people to not be able to play on track. So that's an on-track tournament only. It's a $10 entry fee. We usually get between 300 and 400 players in it. So first place is around $2,000, $2,500. Give it all back, and it's on the first eight races, actually all eight races on Wednesday now. We've cut back to eight races on that day. $2 win place, mythical bankroll. That's a tournament that's very popular with the local players. I also do my big tournament is now a $3,500 entry fee, and that's on Saturday, October 16th. It's called the BCBC NHC Challenge. And that tournament this year is going to be a hybrid tournament. We will play, if you can get to Keeneland, you can play here. If you can't get to Keeneland, you can play online on ExpressBet, TVG, NairaBets, or NJBets. And we're also offering phone wagering for those people like in Texas or in Canada that can't do on an ADW. We don't have an agreement with the ADW in Canada. So I've got some players from Texas and some other states that don't have ADW capabilities that will play by the phone. So we got all kinds of ways to play it. It's $2,500 on a bankroll. First place is probably going to be around $50,000 plus a BCBC plus an NHC spot. I'm going to go away probably six BCBCs and 10 NHCs. So it's a huge tournament. Hopefully going to get about 250 players. And then on Sunday the 17th, we back that up with a $400 tournament that's open to everybody with a 250 live bankroll, 150 goes to prize pool. And you can bet pretty much anything inside the race, win, place, show, exacta, try, super, daily doubles, any way you want it. No minimums, no $400 a race. It's just $250 any way you want to bet it. So those are the three tournaments we're having during live racing. And the huge tournament for us has been the BCBC NHC and then the Grade 1 Gamble in the spring that your friend Jude Feld helped institute here with 32 players back in probably 12 or 13 years ago.
Yeah, yeah. I'll tell you, the innovation and the creativity that goes into putting these wagers together, the new wagers, the existing wagers, tweaking them, always making changes to make them better for the horse player, of course better for the track too, but better for the horse player. And then the innovation that goes into these contests is fascinating. And Jim, I can't thank you enough for spending a little time with me here this morning. Can't wait to see you out at Keeneland again next weekend. It'll be great to have the fans back and the roar of the crowd, and it'll be great to get things back to some sense of normalcy.
It's going to be a lot of fun. It's there's no place but I'd rather be, even though I got to work. It's the best job in the world and the best racetrack in the country, I think. And getting ready for Breeders' Cup, you know, all the great horses coming in for what we call our Breeders' Cup preview. Fall Stars Weekend is certainly the best of the best.
Yeah, going to be incredible. Appreciate the visit, Jim. Good luck, and we'll touch base next weekend.
Thank you, Mike.
All right, Jim Goodman, the Director of Wagering Development at Keeneland. Fascinating stuff. Going inside the mind of the guy that puts all these different wagers together. He has help, but certainly he's the guy that's responsible for creating new wagers and tweaking the existing wagers and putting the contest together. And what a weekend it's going to be. Again, 10 stakes, 9 graded. 8 of those are winning your ins for the Breeders' Cup World Championships. When I come back, it is time for this week's edition of Unsung Heroes, presented by Claiborne. It is one that you will not want to miss. And then Mike Willman from Santa Anita looking ahead to their big day on this Saturday afternoon. This is the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment and Keeneland Select on HRRN.
The moment we've all been waiting for is here. Racing returns to Keeneland for the fall meet, October 8th through the 30th.
and tickets are now available online for pre-purchase. Place your bets during the fall meet anywhere, anytime from your phone with Keeneland Select. New accounts receive $100 back when you wager $200 on the fall meet, plus the standard $100 sign-up bonus. And Keeneland Select members receive free admission to Keeneland. Sign up to wager at KeenelandSelect.com.
It's time now to shine the spotlight on the Darley Taking the Reins Performer of the Week.
Curly Girl looms the late threat in the two-path. Belarus gives way just a bit. Here's Curly Girl up to the front. Curly Girl at 24-1 has found the front. Belarus tries to quicken. It's Curly Girl. Curly Girl wins the Lady Finger.
Curly Girl, the two-year-old daughter of Darley Stallion Nyquist, looked like a seasoned professional in winning the Lady Finger Stakes at Finger Lakes on Monday. That's an effort that makes her your Darley Taking the Reins Performer of the Week. Darley Stallion Nyquist, an Eclipse champion at two, when he won three grade ones, including the Breeders' Cup Juvenile. Nyquist is currently number one on the cumulative second crop sire list and number two on the juvenile sire list. Learn more about Nyquist and all the Darley Stallions by visiting DarleyAmerica.com.
Mark your calendars for Saturday, October 9th, as the best West Virginia Breds in training take to the track for the 35th annual West Virginia Breeders Classics. The night features nine stakes races worth a total of $1 million, headlined by the $300,000 West Virginia Breeders Classic and the $175,000 Kubota Breeders Classic. It all gets started under the Saturday night lights at 7 o'clock Eastern. It's the 35th annual West Virginia Breeders Classics on Saturday, October 9th, here at Hollywood Casino at Charlestown Races.
Fans, Santa Anita's 16-day autumn meeting is underway now through October 31st. Walk-up admission is welcomed, and on Saturday, we'll have five stakes highlighted by three Breeders' Cup Winning Your In qualifiers on a big 11-race card with special early first post time at 12:30. The Grade 1 $300,000 Awesome Again on Saturday will provide the winner with a fees-paid berth to the $6 million Breeders' Cup Classic in November. Also on Saturday, we'll have the Grade 1 $300,000 Rodeo Drive, as well as the Grade 2 $200,000 Santa Anita Sprint Championship, along with the Grade 2 John Henry Turf Championship and the Grade 2 City of Hope Mile. Join us for Oktoberfest on the Grandstand Apron this weekend, and we'll also have our Family Fun Zone in the infield with $5 covering parking, admission, and racing program. Again, walk-up admission is once again welcomed, and we hope to see you soon here at Spectacular Santa Anita.
Fold at Maryland's Country Life Farm, and named after a navigational intersection for airplanes, Cigar would prove to be one of the most notable Maryland bred runners in history, although his career didn't exactly get off to a flying start. Through his first 13 races, Cigar recorded only two wins while racing almost exclusively on the turf, leading his Hall of Fame trainer Bill Mott to give the son of Palace Music an opportunity to race on dirt. That move occurred October 28, 1994, at Aqueduct Racetrack in New York. The result was an easy 8-length wire-to-wire victory, which would mark the beginning of one of the longest win streaks against top competition in racing history. The streak included a remarkable 10 Grade 1s, the Dubai World Cup, and two renewals of the historic Massachusetts Handicap. Upon his retirement in 1996, Cigar had amassed 19 wins from 33 lifetime starts, with earnings of nearly $10 million. He would be inducted into the Thoroughbred Racing Hall of Fame in 2002 and will be forever remembered as one of the greatest Maryland breds of all time. This Maryland moment has been brought to you by Country Life Farm.
The Pons family's Country Life and Maryland Farms are the place for breeding and racing in the Mid-Atlantic. Country Life is nationally recognized for making stallions and curly stands, Mid-Atlantic's leading first and second crop sires, Defining Rod by Tappan, Osler by Warfront, as well as Frisian Fire and Super 99. Maryland's 5/8 mile training track completes the full service facilities from the folding barn to the racetrack. Join the excitement of racing with Country Life Farm, where our partnerships can take you from beginning to winning. Learn more at CountryLifeFarm.com.
You're listening to the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment and Keeneland Select.
Heroes in the world of sports are not uncommon. Oftentimes, thrusting themselves into the limelight through unimaginable feats.
Back behind the ball, Woods puts it.
Get in! He has done it! Tiger is back! Tiger is
top. Tiger Woods, the 2019 Masters Champion.
And breathtaking performances.
Here's how you count to eight, three, two, one. And for the eighth time, college basketball's national championship trophy is coming home to Kentucky.
But behind every great hero, there are others. Individuals who play a crucial role in the achievements of those we read about in the headlines. The ultimate team players. Content to stand behind the curtain, embracing their place as a vital part of a sport's success. In horse racing, these are the unsung heroes.
Well, in a sport filled with unsung heroes that don't often find themselves in the spotlight and get the recognition, I once again have the privilege of visiting with yet another unsung hero this morning. That is Iris Siegler, the longtime handler of so many top horses and so many young horses at the sales across the country. And how about this? Just in the past week, Iris has been in Kentucky, in California, and now finds herself in Maryland, cross country indeed, and she is with me now, a true unsung hero. Iris, good morning.
Good morning.
Excited to hear your story, but boy, what a journey. You've been a handler at the sales for more than 20 years and racking up the miles for sure.
For sure.
Yeah, tell me about how you got started on this.
Well, I was in Oklahoma City at the racetrack trying to learn the horses of pedigree, and then someone asked me, did I want to do the sales? So I said, sales were in Kentucky, so I got in my car from Oklahoma City, and I went to the sales, and I was working for TaylorMade. And then ever since then, that's how I got started. I've been to a lot of different states, a lot of different countries.
A lot of different countries. Talk about some of those.
I've been to England, to Tattersalls. I've been to France. I've been to Ireland and Canada.
Explain to people, when I say a handler at the horse sales, there are people that don't even know that that job exists. Explain to people exactly what you do.
There are breeders that breed horses and bring them to the sale to be sold. So I'm a handler, and I will show their horse to potential buyers for sale, and they could go on to the Kentucky Derby or Triple Crown, or I've been around a lot of good horses. So.
Have you ever taken one out and shown it to a potential buyer and later had it go on to do great things, like the Kentucky Derby?
Yes, I was around American Pharoah when it was a yearling, but it was not sold as a yearling at Saratoga, but yes.
There is, Iris, it's not as simple as just bringing a horse out and walking them around and showing them necessarily. There's actually a skill that's involved with doing your job. Talk about that.
Well, you, number one, as long as you are not afraid and you get the horse and have to walk it for the clients when they ask you to walk it. And the way you turn a horse is very important. And then the way you stand a horse, they would like to see all four ankles at one time so they could get the perfect view of the horse's legs. And then when you walk them, they're trying to get to see how the horse walk and is, you know, they have a good walk or overstep walk. That's a plus for the horse. And that's one. And the breeding is another thing that they look at. No. So that's maybe the number one, is the breeding. And then the way they walk and their overstep. And then the way you stand them is a technique to stand the horse properly for a client.
I can imagine, Iris, that over the years you've had opportunities to do other things, maybe another offer or somebody says, hey, what do you think of this? And you've continued to embrace your job as a handler at the sales. What do you love most about what you do?
Number one, I love the travel part. I'm lucky and got to go to a lot of places in the United States and overseas. And number two, I meet a lot of people around the world. And then, of course, I love being outside and I love the animals. You know, they could be a cheap horse, expensive horse, to me, it doesn't matter. I like treating them all the same.
You mentioned the traveling part, and I talked about it as I was introducing you. In the past week, you have been in Kentucky and California, and now you're in Maryland for the Fasig Tipton sale. How do you do it?
It's hard. Sometimes I wake up like, where am I at, and where's the bathroom at? Because I went to Texas, and then I went to Oklahoma, and then I went to Kentucky, and then I went to California, and now I'm here at Maryland. So sometimes, like, where am I at, and where's the bathroom, and who am I working for? So it's hard, because sometimes I have a day or just a couple of hours to get to the next step. Because after this, I go to Florida, and then back to Florida, get back in the car, and drive all the way back to Saratoga. So,
do you ever get time for a little alone time or vacation time where you can get away from the sales?
I do when I'm not working. Like in December, there's like a 3 weeks I don't work in December, so I go see family and go rest and vacation rest time. So I do.
Talking with Iris Siegler, who is the unsung hero presented by Claiborne on this Saturday morning. She is a true unsung hero. She has been handling horses at the sales for more than 20 years. Iris, take me back to the beginning. Did you come from a racing family? Tell me about your upbringing.
No, nobody in my family's around horses. I think I'm the only one that liked being outside. And I had office jobs. Feel like I just can't breathe. I just cannot go in that office on a nice day. So since I liked animals, I think it was a perfect opportunity to have my cake and eat it, too, get to be outside and be around animals. So I really enjoy that.
Yeah, it's pretty special. And to see where it's taken you, this whole journey, what advice do you give to somebody that maybe wants to do the same thing that you do and wants to be a handler at the sales? What do you tell them?
I tell them, if they're not afraid, come aboard. There's a lots of jobs out here, and when I find people like that, I like to show them, you know, how to show a horse. I have a lot of young people under me or look up to me for, you know, showing a horse. So that makes my job feel good, too, that I am teaching somebody that really wants to do this. So I really like that part, especially having the young people out and to teach them as well for this job to carry on.
You know,
but no, I'm the only one in my family that does this. So when someone tells me, like you, that I'm on the radio, I try to call my sisters and stuff and tell them what I do. Like, okay, all right, Iris. But they haven't really came to the sales to see me work.
It is such a critical job, because without people like you, Iris, doing that job, the consigners can't do it. They can't be out there showing their horses.
No.
It takes a village to put a sale on.
It does.
And you're an integral part of that.
Yes, I'm very lucky.
Have you ever come up to a horse that was kind of mean and you said, oh, gosh, do I have to deal with this horse?
Yes, you see them all the time. You'd be a little afraid, but you know that you're afraid. They could kind of tell you're afraid. So if you could always try to keep a calm horse about yourself, it's easier for you and the horses. Go get it. To me, just go get it. I have people like, oh, I'm scared of this horse, I'm not taking it. And I said, okay, I'll take it. And I have soft hands with the horse, so that helps me and the horse out.
You know, horse people are traditionally very tough, a very hardy group. And Lord knows, Iris, you have been through so much in your life, both personally and professionally. You talked about your journey now 20-plus years. I guess it was, 15 years ago or so that you suffered the tragedy of losing your brother, and you were also injured that very same year. I can't even imagine how hard it had to be to persevere through all of that.
It was very hard. You have your ups and downs. But this, to me, another good thing about this job, you stay so busy, and there's so many people around you that help keep your head up. I think if I had if I had a normal job, it'd be different. But I'm so busy that you don't have time to, you know, cry too long and a lot of people around me to keep my head up. So I'm lucky and blessed in that way, too.
Talk about some of the people, Iris, before I let you go, some of the people that have really helped you along the way that you're never going to forget.
Number one is John Hall. I will never forget him. He's a super horseman and a Superman to me in the horse business. So many people really love John Hall, and he's the one that gave me the courage to do this, because when I went to TaylorMade the first time, I'd never seen a wingling, and they thought I knew what I was doing, but I just thought they were cute, and I was outside. So, and ever since then, I've been on the end of the shank for 21 years, and it's thanks to John Hall. He's my number one fan. He had passed this year.
Yeah, very special man. I remember meeting John when I was first getting into radio some 18 years ago, and such
awesome?
A sweet guy. And he will be missed for sure. There's no doubt about
it. Yes. Yes, sir.
Well, Iris, I'll let you get back to work. I know you've got things to do at the Fasig Tipton sale, so go get it done. And thank you so much for taking the time. It was great to hear your story.
Thank you so much.
Congrats on being an unsung hero.
Thank you so much.
All right. And thank you for what you do. That's Iris Siegler. This week's unsung hero presented by Claiborne. Boy, what a story. What a wonderful person. And you talk about doing this job for love of the game. She epitomizes what it is to love the sport of thoroughbred racing and to love the horses. And I'm so thankful to Sally Ellen Hurst at Country Life Farm in Maryland, who put me in touch with Iris and said, hey, you know, the handlers, they work so hard behind the scenes. They don't often get the recognition. And I thank Sally Ellen for putting me in touch with Iris, because that was a really special visit. And she is indeed a true unsung hero in the sport of thoroughbred racing. I'm back with more right after this word from Claiborne.
An undefeated graded stakes winner on the track, Algorithms has sired over 70% winners from starters. His top runners include Pennsylvania Derby winner Math Wizard, graded stakes winner Recruiting Ready, juvenile stakes winner and multiple graded stakes placed South Bend. And these recent stakes winners and stakes performers.
To get there, but Kanani will win it.
Algorithms, standing at Claiborne Farm.
All right, coming up next, Mike Willman will join me from Santa Anita. A quick reminder that if you do know someone that you feel should be recognized as an unsung hero in our sport, you can nominate them today simply by emailing me directly. That's mike@horseracingradio.net, and I will do my best to recognize those individuals during these unsung hero segments in the weeks and the months ahead. Mike Willman coming up next to talk about the big day at Santa Anita. This is the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment and Keeneland Select on HRRN.
The Breeders' Cup runs here, coming November 5th and 6th, exclusively on HRRN.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence educating and developing industry leaders for over 33 years. Classes are taught by industry experts in the state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
Hey everyone, it's the Baron with this week's North of the Border report presented by Woodbine Entertainment. We begin with a note about adjusted post times. Effective Thursday, October 7th, live racing at Woodbine will commence at 12:55 p.m. every Thursday, Saturday, and Sunday for the remainder of the 2021 season. Post time for Friday live racing will now shift to 4:45 p.m. On the track this Saturday is the conclusion of the Canadian Triple Tierra, when a field of nine talented three-year-old Canadian-bred fillies chased top prize in today's $250,000 Wonder Wear Stakes. Set at a distance of a mile and a quarter on the E.P. Taylor Turf Course, the Wonder Wear drew sophomore stars Money for Row, winner of the Woodbine Oaks, the first jewel in the series, and Il Malacchio, third in the Oaks and winner of the second jewel, the Bison City Stakes, on August 28th. The race has also attracted the ultra-consistent Emmeline from the barn of trainer John Mateen for RCC Racing Stable Limited and Realm Racing Stables. Emmeline launched her sophomore season with the first of four straight runner-up finishes in a 7-furlong Tapita race at Woodbine this June. Her other second-place efforts include the Woodbine Oaks and Bison City, but Mateen is hopeful his hard-trying horse can break her maiden in style later today.
Money Ferreau, trained by Kevin Attard, heads into the Wonderwear off a fourth-place finish in the Queen's Plate against the boys on August 22nd, while Il Malacchio enters today's race sporting a record of 2-3-2 from 10 starts for trainer Martin Drexler and owner Franco Melli, and arrives at the Wonderwear in top form, punctuated by her impressive victory in the Bison City. And that's your North of the Border report for this Saturday morning. For more updates and racing information, visit Woodbine.com or follow along on Twitter at WoodbineTB.
This is jockey Julien Lepau, and you're listening to HRRN.
You're listening to the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment and Keeneland Select.
Medina Spirit and Mandalone are stride for stride. Hot Rod Charlie and Essential Quality closing on the outside. The four of them come into the final furlong. Mandalone fighting for the front. Medina Spirit battles on. Hot Rod Charlie on the outside. Essential Quality on the far outside. The four of them coming to the finish in the Kentucky Derby. Here's the wire. Bob Beveridge does it again. Medina Spirit has won the Kentucky Derby. Mandalone was second. Hot Rod Charlie was third. Essential Quality was fourth. 2:01:02 the final time. Bob Beveridge stands alone with 7 Derby wins.
Mike Penna back with you on the Equine Forum on this Saturday morning. That was Larry Colmus on NBC and HRN with the call of this year's Kentucky Derby. Medina Spirit, who as a horse has been somewhat of a polarizing figure, but not nearly as much as his trainer, Bob Baffert. And we know what's unfolded there. We are still waiting on a decision to see if Medina Spirit will indeed be the Derby winner this year or if he will be disqualified. But one thing's for sure, he's back in action later today in the Awesome Again Stakes, which is a very intriguing race. 3 Grade 1 winners set to go there. It's a very deep renewal. And Mike Willman is the director of publicity at Santa Anita. And as we traditionally do, he helps kick off the meet and look ahead to the big weekend on this Saturday morning. Mike, good morning.
Hey, good morning, Mike. Nice to have you. And nice to hear that stretch call there from Larry Colmus. He noted Bob Baffert stands alone, but here we are almost 5 months later, Mike, and we don't know if he does or not. We still have this cloud of uncertainty lingering over our entire game because the Kentucky Racing Commission has not yet made a ruling. But, you know, he's very much in evidence here today as Medina Spirit and Mr. Baffert, and we'll play it forward. As you know, this horse was scheduled to run last Saturday in that $1 million Pennsylvania Derby. Now, Bob was quoted to the effect that he wasn't sure about the post position. In my opinion, he really wasn't too happy with the way he worked, Mike. He worked in company with Axeman, and it really was not a good work, in my opinion. I watched it, and he came back, worked better in preparation for this race. And, you know, he's facing some tough older horses for the first time. It's going to be interesting. But Medina Spirit now, you know, coming off that win, going a flat mile at Del Mar, he is the 5-2 morning line favorite on John White's line. So it's going to be interesting. There'll be a great deal of attention, obviously, focused on this race. It's the 10th on an 11-race program.
Yeah, and I mentioned the other Grade 1 winners that are involved in this race. It's not just Medina Spirit. You have Tripoli, who was so impressive in winning the Pacific Classic, and Idol, the big cap winner. We know he loves Santa Anita. This is a very deep renewal, Mike.
I'll just tell you this, Mike, just my opinion, and the game's made on opinion. If Tripoli, who's trained by John Sadler, if, that's one of the biggest two-letter words in racing, if he runs back to his race in the Pacific Classic, I think it's game, set, match. I think this is a four-year-old very, very much on the improve. They had understandably had him on grass. You know, he's by Kitten's Joy. But John decided to get him to the dirt. He's done very well so far. I think he's very much on the improve, and they're looking forward very much to that Breeders' Cup Classic, which they've already, you know, qualified to get into by virtue of their win in the Pacific Classic. We've got 5 stakes today, and, you know, several of them, the Breeders' Cup win, and you're in Challenge Race qualifiers. Going to be a lot of fun, and again, a lot of interest in Medina Spirit, but I think Tripoli, I think he's the best horse right now.
Mike, with all those graded stakes, are there some special wagers tied into them, you know, pick 3s, pick 4s, and those types of things?
Well, we've got the regular wagering menu, and then we've got a very popular set of two wagers that tie us with Golden Gate Fields. We've got the Golden Hour Double, which is a low takeout wager, and then the Golden Hour Pick Four. And these wagers are the last four. The Pick Four is the last four here and at Golden Gate, and you know the double, the last race here and the last race at Golden Gate. So it's a lot of fun, and the fans seem to have responded to it. Also, want to note a little bit of a wrinkle today, Mike. A 30-minute early first post today because we've got 11 races, so we'll tee it up at 12:30. But every other day of the meet, it's going to be 1 o'clock.
Let's talk about the race preceding the Awesome Again. Then we'll try to get to the John Henry, too. But we'll kind of work backwards a little bit, Mike, since we started talking about the Awesome Again. That's the ninth race. It's the mile and a quarter Grade 1 Rodeo Drive. Mile and a quarter on the turf. This one is always so competitive. Tell me a little bit more about this year's field.
Well, it's just a great betting race with no, you know, clear-cut standout. John White made Going to Vegas the 5-2 morning line favorite, understandably so off her nice win with Flavian Pratt aboard down there on the John C. Maybe. But Rispoli takes over today, and so, you know, it's going to be interesting. Pratt ends up on Richie Baltus's luck toward the outside, and a pretty impressive U.S. debut. Going a mile and a 16th after she came in from France. So we'll see how she does second time coming out of that first condition allowance through a mile and a quarter. Again, it's a terrific betting race. You know, if push came to shove, I guess I'd go with the favorite Going to Vegas, but I think any way you go in there, there's going to be a lot of value.
Yeah, it is a great betting race. Very competitive. No big standout in the Rodeo Drive. The race before that is the Grade 2 Santa Anita Sprint Championship. Another one that's always kind of a wild shootout. 6 furlongs on the main track. How'd you see that one, Mike?
Well, I know Mark Glatt had to kind of wince when the post position draw was taken because Dr. Shovel, the morning line favorite, ends up down on the rail. This is one top. Notch sprinter. I really have a lot of respect for this horse. And Glatt's also got Collusion Illusion, who's on the outside. Flagstaff just keeps running good races for John Sadler. You know, he's an older gelding. Here he is at 5-2. Pete Miller was belly aching down at Del Mar about the condition of the main track. And, you know, a lot of guys do that. He's certainly not shy about it. CZ Rocket at 5-2. This has just been a terrific claim. By the way, he was claimed and owned singularly by one of my youngest kids' youth football coaches back in the day, a guy named Tom Cagle.
Oh,
and
wow.
Then they sold some percentages of that horse. But this horse really been a great story. They took him for 40, I believe, at Oaklawn Park a year ago last spring. And, man, he's really, really been a gold mine for him. I'll go ahead and swallow hard and take Dr. Shivel on the inside there at 2-1.
All right, that's the eighth race, the Grade 2 Santa Anita Sprint Championship. It's one of four consecutive greatest stakes races to round out the program. Let's talk about the final race of the day, Mike. That's race number 11. It is the Grade 2 John Henry Turf Championship, mile and a quarter on the grass, and it's such a beautiful turf course there. We get a chance to see those thoroughbreds go at the foothills of the San Gabriel Mountains. I absolutely love that view. Again, race 11, the John Henry. 8:30 Eastern, 5:30 Pacific, roughly, is when we'll see that one run. Tell me more about that race.
You know, it might be the best betting race of opening weekend. Got 13 of them signed up. Don't know if there's going to be a late defection or two. Looks like plenty of speed signed up. Anytime you got Acclimate in the lineup, it's a venerable California-bred gelding, and he's got one way to go. He likes to get into that rhythm on the front end. And sometimes in these kind of races, the guys that are riding, they're not so concerned about, that's that cowbred out there, and he'll come back to us. Well, sometimes he doesn't. So it's going to be interesting, but I think he'll have company. Anytime United shows up, he's going to get a lot of attention. But, we've seen that he's not unbeatable, but he's in a good race. I don't want to say bad race, but if you go back, I think, like 8 starts, Mike, he wins and then loses, wins, loses. Now, he comes off a close fourth-place finish, going a mile and 3/8 in the Del Mar Handicap. And so I know Mr. Mandela is hoping that pattern holds, that he gets back now to the W, and he'll be tough. He is strictly the horse to beat, and I just say go ahead and jump in there, and you know, the exotics should be tremendous, and you should get good value on the win in, but United will be the favorite. That's about all I can make of it.
Visiting with the man who is the director of publicity at the Great Race Place, that is Mike Willman. Always a fun visit to kick things off and look ahead to the meet with him and look ahead to the big races coming up on opening weekend. Mike, one other greatest stakes we haven't touched on yet. It's early in the program because it's a short field of five. That's the Grade 2 City of Hope Mile. But that's a race, you know, don't sell it short. It's a race that very well could play in to the Breeders' Cup Mile picture.
Well, there's no question. I mean, it's not officially a Breeders' Cup winning year in qualifier, but it's definitely going to be a stepping stone to that race you just referenced. And obviously, Mo Forza is going to be a very short price. That's why this race is front-loaded on the card. We only got a field of five, and Mo Forza an incredibly talented miler. Pete Miller was on the record like last winter saying he thought this horse was the best miler in America, and he might be right. It's a sentimental story as well because the late trainer Barry Abrams bred him. That was his mare, an unusual heat mare by the name of Inflamed. Is the first dam, the horse is by Uncle Mo. He's had some physical problems. They've managed him very well, but he appears back on top of his game, comes off a solid win in the Del Mar Mile. He's 5-for-7 at this distance, 4-for-6 at Santa Anita over the course and never been off the board. Smooth like straight. He's a tough customer with Rispoli riding here for Michael McCarthy. He's been right there. I mean, he's so, so consistent. That might develop into a match race.
Mike Willman here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike, opening weekend concludes with one more win in your in on Sunday, the Grade 2 Zenyatta. I guess about, what, 8 horses were entered into that one?
Yes, sir. And yeah. To get back to Mr. Baffert, you know, Private Mission, so impressive last time out. You know, she won, I think, by 6.5 lengths and then galloped out. I wrote in the advance the other day. Galloped out, if you look at the video, Mike, halfway around the clubhouse turn, she's the football field in front of the rest of them. She was supposed to run at Parks last Saturday, as was Medina Spirit. She was going to go in the Grade 1 Cotillion. Baffert decided to put the brakes on it. She'll run out of her own stall here. And, you know, she is strictly the one to beat in that Grade 1 Zenyatta on Sunday.
Mike, I always enjoy talking.
Used to be a Grade 1, now it's a 2.
Grade 2, yeah. I always enjoy talking racing with you, but, you know, every time I go to Santa Anita, it takes my breath away when I look at the San Gabriels and I sit there and I watch the races that look like they're being run literally at the base of those mountains. When you think about your job and what you get to do every day, I mean, how cool is that, man, to go to work there every single day?
Well, it's great. You know, I wish we could absolutely minimize some of the really terrible adversity that we have faced the past 3 years, but I think we're certainly going in the right direction. But, you know, I tell people when you love what you do, it's really not work. And, you know, on the racetrack, it's just, you know, Charlie Whittingham had an expression, it's only important when you're waiting for a bus or you're doing it, and that would be behind bars because, you know, it's a time-consuming game, but if you love it, you're in the middle of it, it goes by so quick. And for me, I get to come out, I'm interacting with the top jockeys in the world. You know, there's horsemen, no day is the same, and I have that backdrop, like you said. You know, Doc Strube and his group of investors back in the mid-30s, I think they had the same reaction to it when they first saw it that you have every time you come, and that is that there's just nothing like it, and certainly in the world of sports. And to be able to work there, it's an honor. I love it.
Yeah, and your passion, your enthusiasm, Mike, it's always very contagious, and I can't thank you enough for spending time with me here this morning. Enjoy opening weekend. Enjoy the rest of the meet, and I'm sure we'll talk again soon, my friend.
All right, Mike, all the best. We'll certainly see you at Del Mar for the Breeders' Cup.
Sounds good. Mike Willman, Director of Publicity, Santa Anita, here on HRRN. When I come back, I'll take a look at some historical dates in racing history and refresh the poll question for you here as well. So many of you taking time to vote on that. Really appreciate it. We'll do that, and I'll get you set for hour number three. This is the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
70 organizations, 160 facilities, 7,800 horses, one accreditation. The Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance is the only accrediting body in thoroughbred aftercare and is supported by all aspects of the thoroughbred industry. To learn more or to support the TAA, visit thoroughbredaftercare.org.
The National HBPA is continuously working to protect the health and welfare of horses by advocating and funding research to help reduce equine injuries, lobbying for a national testing lab to oversee and establish absolute uniform laboratory protocols, advocating for every track to undergo an annual independent surface assessment, passionately supporting off-the-track thoroughbred retirement facilities and adoption groups, and so much more. See additional HBPA initiatives at nationalhbpa.com.
To be able to go back to the movies.
Introduce my family to my new girlfriend.
For my husband, who's been a chronic asthmatic his whole life.
So I can visit friends in a different state.
So I can take my granddaughter out to the park again.
So that I can hug my 85-year-old grandma again.
We each have our own reason for why we're getting vaccinated against COVID-19. What will yours be? Visit GetVaccineAnswers.org for information on the COVID-19 vaccines. It's up to you. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
Hey, hon, what you doing with your phone? Taking pictures?
No, I'm asking it questions.
Like what?
Hey, Bobo, do flowers have best friends?
I'm sorry, I'm afraid I don't know that.
Hey, follow me. I want to show you something. Look, flowers do have best friends.
Whoa.
Some answers can only be found in nature. Discover the unsearchable. Visit discovertheforest.org to find a trail near you. Brought to you by the United States Forest Service and the Ad Council.
When kids need medical care, they will often face stressful and life-changing experiences. From complex treatments to long hospital stays, these special patients miss out on the things that most kids take for granted and let kids be kids. That's where Starlight Children's Foundation comes in. Since 1982, Starlight Children's Foundation has transformed the in-hospital experience for more than 17 million seriously ill kids in 800 children's hospitals and facilities across the United States. Our state-of-the-art programs like Starlight Virtual Reality, Starlight Hospital Wear, and Starlight Gaming let kids just be kids, if even for a few moments. Whether donning an action figure gown instead of standard hospital issue, or settling into gamer mode, if it brings a smile, a laugh, or just a break from their reality, it's happiness delivered. Learn more at starlight.org. That's starlight.org.
Hi, this is Calvin Burrow. You're listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment and Keeneland Select.
Very busy third hour of the program coming your way. I'll tell you more about it next. It includes, of course, I Ask, They Answer at 10:30 Eastern. But time now to take a look at a few notable dates in racing history as it pertains to this October 2nd. It was October 2nd, 1943, that Belmont Park hosted Back the Attack Day in support of the war effort. This is kind of cool. Admission was by purchase of $25 or $100 war bonds. And approximately $25 million was raised. A couple of anniversaries. Happy anniversary to Behavin' Jerry. That's right. On October 2nd, 1981, at the age of 17, Behavin' Jerry, the oldest thoroughbred in racing competition, set the record for most career starts by a thoroughbred, 307. He began his career as a two-year-old in 1966 and raced every year thereafter through 1978. Also a happy anniversary to jockey Mike Smith, the Hall of Famer, won his 3,000th career race aboard Old Chapel on October 2nd, 1995. That win came in the seventh race at Belmont Park. And those are notable dates in racing history for this Saturday, October 2nd. I told you I would update you on the poll question, and here it is. So many of you taking time to vote at HRN on Twitter, Horse Racing Radio Network on Facebook. Which of these stakes today is most likely to produce the winner of the Breeders' Cup Classic? The Awesome Again, the Woodward, or the Lucas Classic? Told you my vote. I'm casting my vote for Knicks Go and the Lucas Classic. You heard from Brad Cox in the first hour of the program. I asked him, title defense in the Breeders' Cup Dirt Mile or the Breeders' Cup Classic if he wins the Lucas Classic? He said, nope, we're going to the Breeders' Cup Classic. That's the goal for Knicks Go. I think it's a good move. 2 hours down, one to go on today's Equine Forum. Hour three begins momentarily with our weekly edition of In the Room with Sean Clancy. He sits down with retired Hall of Famer Jose Santos. You won't want to miss that one. Always unique, always interesting. 10:25, Kurt Becker takes you on his weekly stroll through racing history, presented by Lane's End and Keeneland. And at 10:30, our brand new weekly segment, I Ask, They Answer, with trainer Dale Romans and turf writer Tim Wilkin. If your local station is leaving us, you can continue listening to the third hour of the show, Sirius 219, XM 201, and horseracingradio.net. Back right after I pause. 10 seconds for station identification. This is HRN.
From the rail to your radio, this is the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Homeward bound and Mucho Macho Man now kicks away from them. Mucho Macho Man starting to open up on them as they come for home. And a scintillating performance from Mucho Macho Man and Gary Stevens as they take the Grade One Awesome Again in effortless fashion.
See Hero, a new two-year-old star. Look at him charge into the line and then win going away by five, equaling the ancient stakes record here of 1 minute 34 and 4/5 seconds. Absolutely spectacular. See Hero wins the champagne.
Welcome to the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment and Keeneland Select.
Top of the stretch, Mirth has something left. Goes on very gamely. Elysia's World chasing with determination. And Beau Recall in the center of the course. Mirth by 2.5. Beau Recall on the outside of Elysia's World, but they're only battling for second as Mirth makes every pole a winning one in the Rodeo Drive.
But it's Gunrunner, and he's opening up. Florent Giroux took a peek to his left there. Gunrunner's got a six-length lead in mid-stretch. Neolithic is next, then Rally Cry, Discreet Lover, and War Story, but they're way behind Gunrunner. Gunrunner, very impressive in the Woodward.
Now, here's Mike Penna.
What a weekend of thoroughbred racing. 11 Breeders' Cup Challenge races coming your way over the course of the next, 36 hours or so. Two at Belmont, four at Santa Anita, five at Longchamp in France. That means there are 11 opportunities for connections to earn an automatic bid to the big dance at Del Mar coming up November 5th and 6th. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, back with you here on the Equine Forum, continuing with hour number three. Again, a very busy third hour of the show. We're going to get right to it. At Saratoga, Sean Clancy had the chance to catch up with Hall of Fame jockey Jose Santos, a man who knows a thing or two about winning big races. It was a fascinating conversation. Here it is. We go in the room with Sean Clancy.
Body side.
This is In the Room with Sean Clancy.
I'm Sean Clancy, and I'm in the room with Hall of Fame jockey Jose Santos. We're here at Saratoga. Take me back to the first time you came to Saratoga.
Well, thank you. I came over here in 1985. I remember I was riding a horse. The first time I rode over here, I was riding a horse for Nick Zito. There was supposed to be a mile and a half race in the grass and rain that day, like it usually rain in opening day, and they moved the race to the main track. And luckily, I went to the lead and win the race. And after that, I fell in love right away from Saratoga.
Yeah, easy game, right? Just come to Saratoga, put them on the lead and win.
Yeah, it looked easy at the time, but and then when the reality hits, you know, it's not easy. It's not easy. The competition over here is real, real tough because the best horses coming over here, the best jockey, they are over here in the trainer as well, you know, so it's real tough competition, I guess, for since I've been here in 1985 to now, always been tough.
What was it like back when you were Angel Cordero? We had him on the show last week, and he was a champion jockey here going for those titles. You were the first one to kind of dethrone the champ. What was that like for you?
Well, there was a lot of fun. You know, I have a real good agent at the time, which was Frank Sanabria. And it was tough because we have a real good colony of jockeys. Then I can mention and Georgie Velasquez, Jacinto Vasquez, Eddie Maple, Richie McGlory, Robbie Davis. I can say out of the 20 guys that was in the jacket room, maybe 18 of them right now is they are Hall of Fame. And it was fun, you know, when Angel and I was fighting for the title. And he win one race, I win two races, or vice versa. And it was a lot of expectation for the public. So, you know, there was not better than a horse. There was better than a trainer. I mean, sorry, a jockey than either the best Angel and Santos, Isactas, and people was making money. And it was pretty exciting because it was a lot of expectation that who was going to win the title. And luckily, in the end, I win by four races, I believe.
And was it a friendly competition with Angel, or what was it like? You guys, man, obviously arch rivals, but what was that like?
Actually, it was not a friendly competition because...
I don't think Angel ever did anything real friendly.
No, Angel, he, you know how he was, and he don't like to lose, and he win the title for 11 times, and he went to, of course, he went to win it again. He was crossing in front of me, and he played with my mind in the jockey's room. He always come out, you know, with some a rooster. One time he come out to the jockey room like doing some kind of voodoo, and it was funny. And then in the end he said, look, I have a ponytail. If you beat me, you can cut my ponytail. And say, what am I going to give you in return if you beat me? I say, no, you don't have to give me nothing. I say, I just don't want you to beat me. And say, well, it's too bad because I have a good business then. And say, I'm going to beat you. He say, no, you're not going to beat me. Yeah, we're fighting back and forth. And we came in the middle of the meet. We have a slum, him and I. I think in 14 or 15 races that we rode, We won only one race, so and then we took off again, and we was probably Angel win three or four races in the day. So did I, you know. So it was fun. In the end, Angel went, you know, he the last day I win three races. He know he got beat. He came to the jockey run in the last day and the last race with a season. Let me catch his ponytail. So. That was, I think that was like a trophy to me, you know, to be available to cut Angel Cordero's ponytail. It was a lot of fun.
Where's the ponytail? You got it on a mantle somewhere?
I think Frank Sanabria has, and I have the pictures though. It you know, when you look back, and it was a lot of fun.
Coming from Chile, was your goal to get to the top? I mean, how quickly did you think, wow, I can make it to the top in America?
Well, when I came first, I came to Hialeah. You know, a lot of the good trainers, good horses used to go to Hialeah. It was tough in the beginning because the language barrier. But there was a lot of Spanish people as well over there, so... It was a little difficult. It took me about 5 months to win my first race. And then when I started winning, in 8 months, I started breaking record. I broke Angel Cordero record in Gulfstream Park. I won in 50 days, 61 races. So I was winning left and right. So and when 85 came, I went to ride a horse in Aqueduct. And my agent, Frank Tanauro, was there. That's when I met him. He asked me if I want to come to New York. So I opened my eyes and said, I need to go do some finish on the stop in Gulfstream Park. I'll be here in 2 weeks. Since then, I've been here in New York. And it was fun because I started writing for Richard Dutroux Sr. right away, Fran Martin, and a lot of the good trainers, and started winning races right away. And it was fun because Angel and Georgie Velasquez, they was always together. They was compadre, both of them, you know. So when I started winning races, they having one of the two, they be in front and the other one being behind watching me, and they having signals. If you're not coming from inside, they was going, ha! If you're not coming from outside, they was going, ha, ha! So they used to look for me, you know. So one day that there was the two in front of me, and I came right next to them, and I pushed into the ASI, stopped that, ha, ha, shit. Yeah, so, you know, it was, we was competing in the track, and luckily, you know, I rode a lot of good horses, and that helped me a lot, and my career took off, you know.
So they recognized right off the bat that you were a threat to them, the way you rode and the way you could win races.
Yeah, you know, when I came over here in 84, I was not an apprentice. I already rode in Chile for 13 months, and then I went to Colombia for 6 months. For 6 years. So I have plenty experience. I just need the horse, you know, and my agent booked me with very nice horses, and I did on top of them what I'm not supposed to do, and stay away from the bad guys and get into the winner's circle.
Who was the fastest horse you rode?
Well, the fastest horse and I rode was Groovy, but the best horse and I rode was Manila. He won the British Cup in, I believe, in 1986, and I rode it five times and win five grade one with him. It was a wonderful horse. And I believe I rode about 11 champions. And then there was Criminal Type, Metastar, Flies of Free, Crystal Clarence. I mean, horses, they probably, I think Manila is the only one is in the Hall of Fame, but I'm surprised. I was in the Hall of Fame a couple of days ago. The Criminal Tie is not there.
Yeah, he's a good horse, older handicap type horse.
Yeah, I mean, he was the only horse in the same years, probably 88, I think it was. He beat Sunday Silent and the Hollywood Gold Cup, and beat Isigor in the same year, and then Met Mile. So he won, for me, five grade one too.
How do you know when a horse is good? I mean, is it the moment you get on a horse, or like is a good horse different than an average horse immediately when you get on?
Yeah, you see the class of the horses right away when you get on. You know, nothing bad in them, and when they hit to the track and they do amazing stuff, even though sometimes they break bad, but, you know, you give you a chance to get in position, and then when they ask, and they're always there, you know. And I mean, I have to mention a funny side, you know, a horse that won the Kentucky Derby on me. I remember I was here in Saratoga when I believe Edgar Prado was supposed to work the horse, and he don't show up, and they asked me to work the horse. My agent, I said, can you come in and work a horse for Buckley Tag? And I said, wow, for that groggy son of a gun, I'd say. He said, yeah, here is a good horse. I get on the horse and worked him. And I told, don't ever get on this horse because he want to win the Kentucky Derby. I told my agent that day. He say, "Yeah, you shouldn't say. Believe me, this is a real, real good horse." So, and he ran in September in Belmont Park, breaking for the 13th hole and 5.5 furlongs, and he went like 11 3/4 lengths. And I was not wrong. You know, I've been wrong many times, but about horses, I'm pretty much there.
Who was the toughest guy you rode against? Was it Angel or Velasquez, or who was the toughest guy to ride against?
Well, I think the toughest guy, and I rode probably Angel, because he not only that he can ride, and when he know who was supposed to beat, and he go to them, and they say, listen, you have speed, I'm going to let you go, but nah, Angel do the opposite. Yeah, he did it on me, you know, when I came over here. I was riding a speed horse sort of thing, and he told me, look, we both have a speed, let's break nice and easy, and so when we get to the quarter pole, and we see who is the best. So I listened to him and break nice and easy, and I look up, Angel was five in front of me. He came out of there like a crazy guy. And after that, I never believed Angel what he would say. You know, but that was in the track. Outside the track, it's completely different human being. You know, racing is a lot of fun.
Yeah, that was a good lesson Angel taught you, right? I mean, you got a good lesson early.
Yeah, I mean, you learn from a lot of guys. You know, the older you get, the wiser you are. You know, when you see new guys, you do the same to them.
Yeah, that was going to be my next question. Did you do the same thing to young guys?
Yeah, I mean, I was not an aggressive rider. You know, I just worry about my horses, but we take advantage of the apprentice. You know, they are in front, and you get next to them, you smoosh their horses, you know, and to go a little fast to make the pace for us and stuff like that.
Beautiful, huh? How much do you miss riding?
Well, the first 3 years, they was real tough. I've been retired for 14 years. First 3 years was real tough. Right now, you know, I'm 60 years old now, and it's a different ball game. And you see these new guys, you know, you say, well, this guy, they are kamikaze. But, you know, they have a lot of good riders still. And probably in the future, they want to still have good riders.
You could ride with these guys, though, back in the day?
Back in the day, not a problem. They're being behind of us.
What's that old line they asked the Chicago Bulls, would you win the championship, you know, against these guys? And they said, yeah. And they said, how much you win by? Well, we'd probably win by, you know, 10 points, considering we're 60 years old now. This is the Fanticipate question of the day. Jose, who was your biggest fan over your riding career? Your family, your parents? I mean, take me back to who was the biggest fan you ever had in your career?
My biggest fan was my son, Jose Jr. Yeah, he's, you know, I remember I was riding a horse. He was 4 years old. I was riding a horse in Calder for Scotty Schuhofer. And he was just coming back, and he said, Jose, look, if the horse could win, it's fine, but don't abuse him. So I don't abuse the horse, and the horse got beat. He was a big favorite. And Scotty came and see me, and my son was riding it to him, and he said, Dad, this is the worst race that I ever seen you ride. He was a criticizer of me all the time, but he turned out to be a real good guy. Yeah,
I love that. Yeah, your son now is an agent. What's that like, watching your son represent jockeys like he does?
Well, it's put me back in the map, I can say. You know, watching the race today, his jockeys riding, and I'm his bigger fan now. Yeah,
it's funny, it changes, right? Now you're rooting for his jockeys just like he was rooting for you.
That's right, you know, team change.
I remember being here when you won on Lemon Drop Kid, won the Travers on Lemon Drop Kid, and Jose was there. I mean, that might be a special moment to share that with your son like that.
Oh, yeah, definitely. It's always special when you're in the winner's circle, you know, when your son look up you, you know, with so much love and happiness that you won, you know, that's special.
Yeah, those moments when you look over his funny side, how much he enjoyed that and appreciated that, it's great to share it with your family.
Oh, definitely. That's a priceless moment. You know, sometimes when I'm home, you know, having a drink, and I get my albums with photos and start remember, you know, the moments, and it's fun. You know, it's when you see pictures or you see the tape of the races, and and you remember a little thing that happened in the race that nobody knows, and you see, well, here in the half a mile, I make the difference to win the race. And also, you know, as you see here in the half a mile, I messed it up and I lose the race because that, you know. So, you know, people say, you know, what you can change in your career. It's nothing to change it. I mean, I have a great career and I made it to the Hall of Fame. And that's the best thing that can ever happen to me in races.
Yeah, what's it like walking into the Hall of Fame for that ceremony and looking around and seeing the guys that you're with? And I mean, you get a moment where you think, "Wow, I really accomplished something with my career."
Yeah, I mean, you see Vasquez, Cordero, you see all the big guns, and they are there, you know, with me. And I went a couple of days ago to the Hall of Fame and I look my plaque and say, wow, I definitely did something good in races. And it made me proud. It made me proud.
That's Jose Santos. Got a lot to be proud of in a career that spanned decades and wound up in the Hall of Fame. Thanks, Jose.
You're welcome.
And I'm back with more right after a word from the sponsors of In the Room, Fanticipate, and My Racehorse.
Want to get closer to your favorite stars in racing? Fanticipate is an online auction platform where fans can bid on unique items from their favorite competitors before the gates even open. Compete with other fans to win items from owners, trainers, and jockeys participating in select Breeders' Cup Challenge Series races and more. And take home a piece of the race. Visit Fanticipate.com for more information and to view our live auctions. Own a piece of the action with Fanticipate.
Experience the thrill of racehorse ownership with My Racehorse Microshares. From the team that brought you Kentucky Derby winner Authentic, My Racehorse offers affordable racehorse ownership for less than $100 with no ongoing fees. My Racehorse features top trainers including Todd Fletcher, Steve Asmussen, Richard Mandela, and more, along with a supercharged mobile app that allows you to purchase shares online. Enjoy insider access to your stable and attend exclusive events. Visit MyRacehorse.com and become an owner today. My Racehorse offers securities only for the use of an offering circulation. It's part of an offering statement. Qualified by the Securities and Exchange Commission under Tier 2 of Regulation A.
Back, it's time for Kurt Becker to take you on his weekly stroll through racing history, presented by Lane's End and Keeneland. And then I'll get you set for this week's edition of I Ask, They Answer with Dale Romans and Tim Wilkin. This is the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment and Keeneland Select on HRRN.
Watch and wager on world-class racing from Woodbine Racetrack with Thursday, Saturday, and Sunday post times at 1:10 p.m. Eastern and a Friday post time of 4:50 p.m. Eastern. Don't forget, on October 3rd, we have our Breeders' Stakes for three-year-olds foaled in Canada and our Grade 3 Ontario Fashion Stakes for fillies and mares. With racing now through December 4th and plenty of weekend stakes, you are not going to want to miss out on the action at Woodbine. For more information on racing and handicapping, visit woodbine.com.
The Adina Springs Stallion roster is loaded with classic bloodlines and classic performance.
Oh, the classy point of entry would not be denied.
Dynaform Azare Point of Entry, a global sire with black type horses in five countries, and the number one sire of grade one performers in his crop. Multiple grade one winner Shaman Ghost, the best son of Ghost Zapper, whose two-year-olds race this year.
And it's going to be won by Shaman Ghost! He has won the Woodward!
Silent Name, the only son of Sunday Silence at Stud in North America, and Canada's champion sire 3 years in a row.
Silent Poet in front of the Neoptic, and this one's for you, Martha. Silent Poets won it.
And the newest addition to the Adina Springs roster, American Guru, from a proven winning family, steeped in tradition, with a strong Mr. Prospector influence on both sides.
But American Guru continues to keep on giving, and American Guru has dominated.
Classic bloodlines, classic performance. Visit AdinaStallions.com.
After an unprecedented year apart, the time has finally come to say, welcome back, fans, to the Breeders' Cup World Championships. Welcome back to the prestige and excitement to witnessing history firsthand. As the world's most majestic athletes look to be crowned champion in 14 thrilling Breeders' Cup races. and over $31 million in purses and awards waits across the finish line. On November 5th and 6th at Del Mar, the Breeders' Cup will welcome it all back. The world's best thoroughbreds, the brightest stars, and the most passionate fans. An experience that's a breed apart. Tickets on sale now at BreedersCup.com/tickets.
This is trainer Chad Brown, and you're listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Listening to the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment and Keeneland Select.
Hello, I'm Kurt Becker. Thanks for joining me as I take another stroll through racing history presented by Lane's End and Keeneland. This weekend, our friends at Woodbine Racetrack in Toronto, Ontario, will host the 130th running of the Breeders' Stakes, the third and final jewel in Canada's Triple Crown. The race will take place tomorrow on October 3rd at a distance of a mile and a half on the E.P. Taylor Turf Course. And so today, we look back on one of the great moments in Canadian Triple Crown history. We remember the 30th anniversary of the Breeders' Stakes victory by Dance Smartly, who became the only filly ever to win Canada's Triple Crown. A homebred for the Samson farm of Toronto steel industrialist Ernie Samuel, Dance Smartly was foaled on April 5, 1988. The Dark Bay filly was by Danzig, and her mother was former Canadian champion filly Classy and Smart, herself a Samson homebred. Trained by former Olympic equestrian gold medalist Jim Day, Dance Smartly had won three of five races as a two-year-old in 1990, finishing with a respectable third-place effort in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Fillies at Belmont Park. It was enough to earn a Sovereign Award as Canada's top two-year-old filly. As a three-year-old the following spring, the plan had been to start Dance Smartly in the Ashland Stakes at Keeneland and then to head to the Kentucky Oaks. But a virus derailed those plans, and she went back to her home base at Woodbine to regroup. Following wins in a pair of listed stakes, Dance Smartly captured the Canadian Oaks in mid-June of 1991 with Chicago-based jockey Pat Day riding her for the first time. The ease of her four-and-a-half-length victory over stablemate Wilderness Song was such that her connections decided to give her a shot against males in the Queen's Plate. As the opening leg of the Canadian Triple Crown, at a distance of a mile and a quarter on the dirt, the 132nd running of the Queen's Plate would be a demanding test. Dance Smartly had already won the Starchute Stakes at 6 furlongs and the Celine Stakes at a mile and a 16th. She had won the Canadian Oaks at a mile and an eighth, and she would make the mile and a quarter of the Queen's Plate look little more than routine. The final margin was 8 lengths. Dance Smartly, the 1-2 favorite as part of a coupled entry with stablemate Wilderness Song, defeated males that day, did so at 10 furlongs, and won the Queen's Plate, her country's most prestigious event. But she wasn't finished. 3 weeks later, Dance Smartly took the second jewel of the Canadian Triple Crown by winning the Prince of Wales Stakes at Fort Erie at a mile and 3/16 as the 1-10 favorite as part of a three-way Samson entry. And then, on August 18, 1991, Dance Smartly became the first filly ever to win the Canadian Triple Crown, capturing the Breeders' Stakes at a mile and a half on the turf at Woodbine. Dan Loisel with the call.
It's Dance Smartly by 2.5 lengths. January Man is closing on the far outside. They come to the eighth pole. It's Dance Smartly by 3. January Man on the outside. And the queen of Canadian racing is going to wear the crown, the Triple Crown, the Bank of Montreal Triple Crown. Dance Smartly, majestic in victory.
Winning by 8 lengths as part of a coupled entry, which was favored at odds of 1-5, Dance Smartly drew clear and not only won the Canadian Triple Crown, but also became the richest Canadian-bred female of all time with earnings of $1.9 million. Following another victory on the turf over males in the Molson Export Million at Woodbine, Dance Smartly came to the United States for the Breeders' Cup distaff. Journalists covering the event described the Dark Bay filly as tall, with a long, fluid stride. Jockey Pat Day said she was mature, eager to please, and responded to minimal urging. And so the tall, cool, calm, collected filly went to the post in the Breeders' Cup distaff at Churchill Downs as the 1-2 favorite, coupled with stablemate Wilderness Song. And she did not disappoint.
There she goes, Dance Smartly, with a sweeping move on the outside, is coming toward the lead. Grand Girlfriend also kicks in. Queen is coming hard on the extreme outside now. as the field comes down toward the final furlong. Brought to mind with a short lead. Dance Smartly is right there on the outside. Fit for a Queen. Brave at the rail third. Here comes Versailles. Tridio's kicking in late. But it is Dance Smartly. She takes the lead under Pat Day's urging and pulls away here by two. It is Versailles Tridi, but it's too late and not enough. And it is Dance Smartly who strides under the line. Undefeated this year and the undisputed queen of racing on this continent.
Announcer Tom Durkin was not the only one impressed with Dance Smartly that day. One journalist wrote, "This filly can sprint, go long, compete on grass, defeat males, and beat older runners of her sex. The only question which remains is whether she can leap tall buildings in a single bound." Dance Smartly would earn accolades as Canadian Horse of the Year for 1991, and she would be named champion three-year-old filly in both the U.S. and Canada. She had also become the first Canadian bred ever to win a Breeders' Cup race. As a broodmare, Dance Smartly would produce back-to-back winners of the Queen's Plate, and her accomplishments both on and off the track earned her induction into the Hall of Fame in both the U.S. and Canada. Dance Smartly died in August of 2007 at the age of 19. We wish everyone a safe journey in this weekend's Breeders' Stakes, and we remember Dance Smartly, who 30 years ago became the first and still the only filly ever to win the Canadian Triple Crown. Please join me again next week as I take another stroll through racing history presented by Lane's End and Keeneland. For HRRN, I'm Kurt Becker.
Goosebumps. What a story. Well done, Kurt Becker, and my thanks to Lane's End and Keeneland for making those segments possible each and every week. I'll get to another break. I come back with this week's edition of I Ask, They Answer, and I will ask Dale Romans and Tim Wilkin, is Churchill Downs Incorporated friend or foe of the thoroughbred industry? That's just one of the topics we'll debate next. This is the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment and Keeneland Select on HRRN.
The moment we've all been waiting for is here. Racing returns to Keeneland for the fall meet, October 8th through the 30th. And tickets are now available online for pre-purchase. Place your bets during the fall meet anywhere, anytime from your phone with Keeneland Select. New accounts receive $100 back when you wager $200 on the fall meet, plus the standard $100 sign-up bonus. And Keeneland Select members receive free admission to Keeneland. Sign up to wager at KeenelandSelect.com.
The richest meet in Oak Lawn's history begins Friday, December 3rd through Sunday, May 8th. The 66-day meet will offer more than $45 million in purses with 36 stakes races totaling $12.3 million. And all allowance races are now worth $100,000. Oak Lawn boasts the richest Triple Crown Prep Series in the country, highlighted by the $1 million Rebel on Friday, February 26th, and the Grade 1 Arkansas Derby Saturday, April 2nd, now offering a purse of $1.25 million. Learn more at oaklawn.com.
This son of Danzig ranks among the world's elite sires, with Grade 1 winners on dirt and turf and star performers both at home and abroad. Warfront's success as an international super sire is unmatched. Recent stars include War of Will, a classic winner on dirt and a Grade 1 winner on turf, Halliday, and Civil Union. In the auction ring, his progeny continued to command top dollar. Warfront, standing at Claiborne Farm.
A five-time graded stakes winning earner of almost $3 million, Airdrie Studs Collected is the all-time leading earner by City Zip. Winner of the Grade 1 Pacific Classic over Arrowgate, Collected also romped by 14 lengths in the Grade 3 Precisionist Stakes, defeating Accelerate. Collected bred full books of quality mares in his first two seasons, and his first crop yearlings will be unveiled at public auction later this summer. Collected stands at Airdrie Stud for 17,500 stands and nurses. Think about it.
The thrill of thoroughbred racing is back at Laurel Park. The brand new dirt surface and world-class turf course are ready for the races. Spend an afternoon dining with someone special at your choice of restaurants. Grab a bite with friends at the food court or relax and enjoy racing action from around the world in the sports bar. Laurel Park has it all. The beer is cold, the action is hot, and the horses are fast. Nothing beats a day at the track. Live racing Thursday through Sunday, post time 12:40 p.m.
Hi, this is Doug O'Neill. My favorite radio show is the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment and Keeneland Select.
But now on the far side of the Arlington course, which hosted the first $1 million thoroughbred race, and its sister roller, who just leads Golden Command, as Dawn's Dancer starts to make her move for Rocco Bowen, as sister roller spins them in for one more time, and Juju Special Girl looks the game toward the inside as they come into this final furlong. It's sister roller, Dawn's Dancer, Juju Special Girl looking to make a winning split, but in tight quarters, they're close to home. Sister roller, Dawn's Dancer, Juju Special Girl, Sister Ruler will be the last winner as Arlington closes its chapter in American racing history.
John G. Dooley with the call of Sister Ruler under jockey Roman Constantino, who brought down the curtain on Arlington Park last Saturday. The Illinois bred, along with her trainer Michelle Boyce and owner Hoffman Farms Racing, will go down in history as winners of the final race ever held at Arlington, which is now scheduled to be sold to the NFL's Chicago Bears. That is just one topic we will discuss in this week's edition of I Ask, They Answer with trainer Dale Romans and turf writer Tim Wilkin. Last week's show, we had Wilkin seeing ghosts. Dale was lining up for quesadillas. Who knows what this one's going to bring? Guys, good morning. Let's go ahead and start there. This news about Arlington really does come as no surprise. David McCaffrey, executive director of the Illinois Thoroughbred Horsemen's Association, was quoted this week as saying that lack of surprise doesn't make the decision any easier to accept. And I think a lot of people would agree with that. So, Dale, I'm going to start with you. Is this the end of racing in Illinois, or can the industry survive without its longtime flagship venue?
Well, it's one of the saddest days in racing as far as I'm concerned. I don't know. It rivals. It's right up there with losing Hollywood Park. And, you know, Illinois has a great history of horse racing. Arlington Millions, the first $1 million race in America. I mean, what are they going to do with the great statue of John Henry and the BART hitting the wire together? If people haven't been there, it's the greatest grandstand in the world. It's just an unbelievable facility. And it's such a shame that Paramutual Racing can't make it in a great city like Chicago. There's so much that plays into it, politics, alternative gaming all over the state. It's just a sad situation. There's a day I never thought would come, even though I've been hearing about it forever. I kept thinking, well, something will happen. Someone will step in and save the place. Someone will purchase it to make it a racetrack. And on the other hand, it's a sad situation to see the Bears leave Soldier Field. As long as I can remember, they've been playing on the water at Soldier Field. It's shifting sands in the sports world. None of it positive in my mind.
Yeah. Yeah. Timmy?
Yeah. I mean, it's like Dale said, it's horrible. I mean, Citation ran at Arlington. So did Secretariat. I mean, I remember the local pizza man, you know, lighting up the Arlington Million that one year. And then when Arlington had that fire in 85, they rebuilt it into a beautiful, beautiful facility. It hosted the Breeders' Cup in 2002. Unfortunately, that Breeders' Cup might be remembered for the betting scandal when those three knuckleheads were trying to beat the system and almost did, betting it from an OTB in Catskill, New York, near me.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I can see why the Chicago Bears want to get out of Soldier Field. It's the smallest stadium capacity wise in the NFL. I think it's like 61,000, but still, Soldier Field, you think of, you know, midwinter football, snow coming in, and now you're going to have a stadium there that's going to be a dome stadium and most likely. And it just, that won't seem right. And it just won't seem right to have a football field on top of a once great racetrack that had so much history to it. I think it stinks.
Will the Illinois racing industry be able to survive without Arlington Park? Or is this the end?
Well, I know that they have Hawthorne out there, and I know that they say that they can accommodate everybody there, but Hawthorne also, has harness racing there. So there'd be a lot of downtime. I don't know what's going to happen to a lot of the horsemen that have called Arlington home forever. I feel bad for them. And where do they go? I mean, can they go somewhere else? I don't know. Do they want to go somewhere else? I don't know that either. It's just that, you know, racing in Illinois, I mean, it's one of the third largest, you know, Chicago's one of the third largest cities in the country. And to not have racing there is just, it's going to be a big empty hole.
What about Fairmount Park? FanDuel is involved there now. Is there any opportunity for them to kind of take the ball and run with it in some respects? Not at the same level of Arlington, but Dale, is that a possibility?
Well, I can never see them running at that kind of level. It just doesn't have the population in Collinsville as they do in Chicago. And
yeah,
he just can't, you know, I can't see it happening. They're doing well right now. They're at a $200,000 race this summer. You never thought you would have heard that, but I mean, if Fairmont can have a resurgence, I don't understand why Arlington couldn't. I mean, it just seems it's still unbelievable to me. I still have hope in the back of my mind that it will, something will come around and the deal will fall through with the Bears and we'll have racing in Chicago.
Yeah, that is not a done deal.
It doesn't look good.
Yeah, it doesn't look good, but there's still a lot of hoops that have to be jumped through in order for the Bears to make that move to Arlington Heights, Illinois. And I'm sure the city of Chicago is going to make a move.
The other thing, too, Mike, is that the Bears have a lease with the city of Chicago through, I believe it's 2033. And if they want to get out of that lease, they got to pay the city of Chicago like $84 million. So
yep.
I'm sure there's something to that, too.
Well, they just paid $200 million for a building they're going to knock down, a marble, beautiful, gorgeous Taj Mahal of racing that they're going to knock down. So $80 million to get out of the contract doesn't sound like that much.
No, it doesn't. To me, it does. But right. I don't have those big pockets like you do.
Right. Well, I don't have my pocket, big pockets, but they must have because they sure are spending it. $200
yeah,
million, it probably costs another $50 million to demolish it.
I know, and it's just sickening to feel that, you know, that beautiful building is going to see the wrecking ball. And that's just, it's just not a good day for racing. It really isn't.
No. And I hope it's not a trend that we see growing.
No, that's something that we just do not have to see because, you know, there's got to be more feel-good stories in racing. And this is not one of them.
No, it's going the wrong direction. And, you know, whether Arlington was was still successful as it once was or if it could be again, it's a learning ground for a lot of horse fans and players. And that part's going to be gone. We'll feel the impact more years from now than we'll feel tomorrow.
Yeah. I agree.
Turn the page. Let's get a good question. Happy question.
Well, I don't know how happy this next topic is going to be, but I think it could be a very good question. Is Churchill Downs Incorporated a villain or a savior for thoroughbred racing? And let me explain. Following that Arlington news, guys, the answer is going to seem extremely obvious to most racing fans. However, the reason I asked this question is because 24 hours after the Arlington announcement, CDI announced that it would be opening a new historical racing machine venue in downtown Louisville, which is going to feature 500 historical racing machines. The venue is expected to create $10 to $12 million per year in additional purse money for Churchill Downs. So I ask you, is Churchill Downs Incorporated friend or foe? Who wants it first?
I'll go first. I think Churchill Downs is a friend of the dollar. And wherever the dollar can be found, they'll be a friend. And as long as paramutual or horses are needed, then they're a friend of racing. The thing at Arlington Park is much more complicated than Churchill just not doing it. There's a lot of them ruining it. It's a lot of politics, like I said, and a lot of fees that were involved and things that the city of Chicago and the state of Illinois could have come a long ways to help Churchill keep Arlington Park open. With that being said, Kentucky is pro racing through and through, and the Frankfurt has worked with Churchill in every aspect of their company and keeping racing healthy. As far as Kentucky goes, they're a savior to racing and they're doing a great job. As for the rest of the country, it's a little bit sad to sit back and watch.
Yeah, I mean, it's I know that Churchill's being viewed as a villain by a lot of people across the country with some of the things they've done recently with racetracks. I mean, Hollywood Park, Calder, gone, and now Arlington. And supposedly Churchill decided not to go for a gaming license at Arlington this past time around after wanting to do it for years. So it looked like the writing was on the wall that it was going to go away. And, you know, I understand. And I think, but, you know, on the other hand, I think it's great that, you know, $10 to $12 million in added purse money at Churchill Downs is outstanding for the horsemen that are stabled there. And it'll probably, I would think, entice other people to bring their horses in to run for some of that. But, you know, I see where people are ticked off at the at Churchill Downs because of that, because of these tracks going away. But it's like it is. It's a business. And if the money's going to be brought in, it's going to be brought in. And I had to do some research on these gaming, these historical racing machines. I guess it just proves that people bet on anything. I mean, you could probably bet on how much a dog poop is going to weigh on a Thursday morning when you take them out for a walk. You can bet on anything, and people will bet on it. So,
except for horses at Arlington Park.
That's right. You can't bet on them anymore. And that's going to be a sore subject for both of us probably as we go forward, because it was such a great place. And
yeah,
I mean,
it's hard to defend Churchill when three iconic racetracks fall to the wayside under their guidance.
It is. And it's, I don't know what it's.
Yeah.
Who does it benefit besides them? I mean, look at all the people. And granted, I mean, when the last day at Arlington Park, they only drew like 7,000 people. People, for the most part, aren't going to the racetracks anymore because you can bet offline, which, you know, I yearn for the days, even though I wasn't around to watch them in the 50s, when you'd look at a Wednesday at Belmont Park or any racetrack and the aprons were full of people because I guess they didn't want to go to work that day, but they bet at the track. Now you don't have to do that. You can sit in your living room and bet, which is, I guess it's the way of the game now, but I used to love it, seeing a Wednesday afternoon in a packed racetrack. You never see that anymore, unless it's in the summer at Saratoga or in the fall at Keeneland.
That's true.
Yeah, how many were there last night?
There were quite a few. I don't know the exact number, but it was a fun environment, and there were a lot of people there. We got lucky, won a couple of races, so we had a good night.
Yeah, I saw that. Congratulations.
Thank you. I think it was a good day.
Yeah, good day. And Medina Spirit is hoping it will be a good day for him in the Awesome Again Stakes. This is topic number three. The Derby winner returns to action against older horses in today's Awesome Again at Santa Anita after being scratched from last weekend's Pennsylvania Derby. After what we saw from Hot Rod Charlie in that race last Saturday, do we think Bob Baffert made the right call?
Well, I guess we'll find out in a few hours, but... You know, Hot Rod Charlie ran a great race down there in Parks. I was there to see it, and, you know, I was, just to revisit that for a second, I was kind of surprised there. I mean, I know why there was an inquiry, but I never thought that horse would be taken down because I thought he was well clear of Midnight Bourbon. But back to Medina, you know, Bob obviously didn't go to Parks. It wasn't because of the post position. He didn't go because I don't think he felt his horse was ready for a optimum performance, and he didn't want to run against those two speed horses. But, you know, this isn't like it's an easier spot either. He's running against older horses, albeit they're not the monsters of the division, but still he's going to be running against the Pacific Classic winner, Pacific Classic runner-up, I believe. And all things being equal, he should win if he's right. And I would anticipate that he's going to run a big effort, a big race today, and I think he wins.
It's going to be hard to tell whether or not he made the right decision. I mean, obviously, if he wins, he did. But if he doesn't win, he probably made the right decision, too, because if he doesn't win out there, he wasn't going to beat Hot Rod Charlie the other day. So why ship all the way across the country and run?
Yeah, and again, this is a win and you're in. And, you know, I know Bob pretty well. He probably figures if I win this, it's a win and you're in. They got to let me run in the Breeders' Cup because I won one of those races.
Well, they don't have to, though. It's been proven. They seem in racing the powers to be and do whatever they want.
Yeah, but if it's win and you're in, hey,
right,
open the door and let me in. I won a race that you said is a win and you're in.
Yeah, that'd be interesting. There's another plot thickens in the story.
Do you guys think that Medina Spirit is ever going to get the respect that he deserves as a Derby winner because of what happened with Bob Baffert and the situation surrounding him?
No, there'll always be an asterisk by his name. He was a long shot running for Baffert, which is unusual, so I don't think he was respected as much as going into the race, and I think afterwards it's even been less. It'd be hard for him to earn the respect that a Derby winner deserves.
There's no doubt about that. I mean, if none of this had happened, then he goes down as the great training job of Bob Baffert. If none of this stuff ever came about, you know, saying, well, Bob Baffert, Mr. Derby, has done it again. But because of the circumstances that are surrounding Medina Spirit right now, there's always going to be the doubt in the mind of the people. And that's unfortunate because I still say Bob Baffert is a great horse trainer. I don't think he knowingly, wittingly wants to do anything wrong to a horse. I just don't buy that.
No argument.
All right, one final topic to get to, guys, and it involves Nick's Go, who is going to be a heavy favorite in today's Lucas Classic at Churchill Downs. The Woodward in New York, the Awesome Again in California, both appear to have come up tougher, so it looks like Brad Cox has made the right call. Assuming that Nick's Go takes care of business and he wins the Lucas Classic easily, will that serve the purpose of getting him ready for the Breeders' Cup? And Dale, I'll throw it to you first.
I think so. I mean, he's a natural athlete. You can tell it doesn't look like he takes a whole lot of work and natural speed, natural endurance. It's a perfect spot for him. It's his race to lose. And whenever you can run for this kind of money and still have the same equal prep that you could in other places in the country and walk out of your back into your backyard from your back door like he is here at Churchill Downs, yeah, it's beneficial. So there wasn't any reason to ship. He got a little bit of an easier spot. It's his race to lose. And from there, just go right on into the Breeders' Cup.
Yeah, as from a trainer's standpoint, you want to have the easiest race possible and a win as you head into what is the biggest race of the year, the Breeders' Cup Classic. Do you want to have the horse throw it all down in the race before the Breeders' Cup Classic and then have to bounce into the Breeders' Cup Classic? I would think you'd want to have the easiest spot possible, and then you get your horse ready for the Classic. And, you know, sometimes these horses, if they have a big, big effort and they have to run real, real hard, doesn't it take a while for them to recover from that? And maybe they're not at their optimum for the Breeders' Cup Classic. I think Nick's Go is right now lined up perfectly to head to the Classic off of what should, I think, be his, like Dale said, his race to lose. And right now I wouldn't bet against him in the Breeders' Cup Classic, I don't think.
Yeah, well, we'll find out later today. Brad Cox, Nick's Go, set to go in that Lucas Classic at Churchill Downs. That is I Ask, They Answer. We're back next week right around 10:30 Eastern with another brand new edition. We'll tackle some more topics. But, guys, no ghosts, no quesadillas this week, but it was fun.
It was a good conversation. You started out with it was too sad to start with.
But we'll make it happier. As we get closer to Halloween, we should revisit the ghost.
Yeah. Next week, let's have some happy topics.
Let's do it. Appreciate it, guys. We'll talk to you soon.
Thanks.
See ya.
Dale Romans, Tim Wilkin, I Ask, They Answer. I'll be back with more right after this.
Gainsway Stallion Tappet, America's most dominant sire with over 80 greatest stakes winners and more lifetime grade one winners than any sire in the nation. Recent stars include multiple stakes winner and grade one victress, Valiance.
Valiance with the lead. Ollie's Candy trying. Valiance prevails by 3/4 of a length in the Judmont Spinster.
And two-year-old sensation, Essential Quality, winner of the grade one Breeders' Cup Juvenile.
Final furlong of the Juvenile. Essential Quality coming forward for the lead. Late run from Keep Me In Mind. Hot Rod Charlie to the inside. Essential Quality and Luis Saez have won the TVG Breeders' Cup Juvenile.
In the sales ring, his yearlings topped both opening sessions of Keeneland September, including the $2 million sale topper. A breed shaper, a dream maker. Tappet, standing at Gainsway.
Oh.
Have you heard about the new handicapping and betting app that is sweeping the nation? It's called First Bet, and it puts the power of AI-assisted handicapping, seamless wagering, and live HD video in the palm of your hand. Thousands of bettors have already made First Bet their way to handicap, bet, and watch more than 300 of the world's top tracks. Isn't it time for you to join them? And when you give First Bet a try today, you can cash in on a huge welcome bonus. Sign up with promo code SPORTOFKINGS, all one word, and you will get $10 just for joining, as well as a 10% rebate, up to $500 for your first 30 days. With that much free cash on the line, what do you have to lose? Get started at first.com/bet. That's st.com/bet. And don't forget promo code SPORTOFKINGS when you sign up. And if you already have an ExpressBet account, you're way ahead of the game. Simply log into FirstBet using your username and password, and you're off to the races.
Up to 18 years or older and 21 years old in certain states to open an account with FirstBet and reside in a state where such activity is legal, void or prohibited. National Gambling Support Line 800-522-4700.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence educating and developing industry leaders for over 33 years. Classes are taught by industry experts in the state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
He flew fighter jets in two wars and taught you how to drive a car. He fed everyone on the block but never shared his secret recipes. And every time he'd tell a story, he'd own the room. But now more than ever, he may feel alone. Today, older adults and their loved ones are struggling to connect in a time when connection has never been more important. But there is something we can do. Embrace our older loved ones through StoryCorps Connect. With StoryCorps Connect, you can honor seniors remotely with an interview about their life. Every interview will be archived at the Library of Congress, becoming part of American history, so that years from now, future generations can listen in.
All right, Grandpa, what's one piece of advice you have for me?
Just three words, sweetheart. Live with courage.
The man that had the best stories still has plenty of stories to tell. So connect virtually and share the conversation of a lifetime at StoryCorpsConnect.org/AARP. Connect, honor, share. StoryCorps Connect. A message from AARP, StoryCorps, and the Ad Council.
Hi, this is jockey Brian Hernandez. For me, there's no bigger thrill than crossing the finish line in front, and nobody captures the excitement of our sport like Horse Racing Radio Network. Each week, HRRN brings you exclusive talk shows, podcasts, and in-depth conversations with the biggest names in racing, jockeys, trainers, owners, and more. Plus, HRRN is committed to helping disabled riders through their support of the PDJF. So climb aboard a winner today by visiting horseracingradio.net.
Hi, this is jockey John Court. You're listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment and Keeneland Select.
Don't forget, the October issue of Blood Horse Magazine features 170 pages, including a series of special segments. You can download a copy of the October issue now from the Blood Horse Magazine app via the App Store or Google Play, or subscribe and receive a free gift at bloodhorse.com/subscribe. Just fantastic work by the team at Blood Horse, Eric Mitchell, Lenny Schulman, and Ed Bowen, with these special features in this week's 170-page edition. Well, you know, it's been such a busy program, and my thanks to all of our guests. I'll walk through the guest lineup for you here in a minute, and if you missed any of it, you can go to our website at horseracingradio.net and listen to the podcast afterwards. But I forgot to bring you the First Bet, which is presented by our friends at First Bet, and here is the first bet of the day. It comes in race 10 at Belmont, the Woodward Stakes, with a post time of 5:45 Eastern. It's number 3, Art Collector. You heard from Bruce Lunsford to kick off the show today, his owner and breeder. Art Collector is 3-1 on the morning line, has a 32% win projection from First Bet, ranks 15 points higher than both Maxfield and Code of Honor, is the controlling speed and could wire the field. And the Charlestown Classic winner will be seeking his third straight in the Woodward today. Keep in mind, he won 4 in a row last year, so he's very capable of going on a run. That is Art Collector in the Woodward, number 3. Today's First Bet brought to you by our friends at First Bet. And you can head over to the First Bet app to place your wagers.
Poll question today presented by OwnerView and the Thoroughbred Owner Conference. Which of these stakes is most likely to produce the winner of the Breeders' Cup Classic? They're being run today. The Awesome Again, the Woodward, the Lucas Classic. You know, for me, it's all about the Lucas Classic and Nick's Go. We'll see if I'm right. Well, we'll have to wait some, 34 days from today to find out if I'm right about that one. But it's going to be a spectacular road to the Breeders' Cup. And my thanks to all of our guests for being with me here this morning. That includes Bruce Lunsford, who kicked off the show right around 8:15 Eastern time. It was followed by Brad Cox going down the road to the Breeders' Cup. Jim Goodman from Keeneland, the director of wagering there, was with me. You also had Mike Willman, the director of publicity at Santa Anita. Jose Santos went in the room with Sean Clancy. Kurt Becker for his stroll through racing history. And my thanks to Dale Romans and to Tim Wilkin for all of their help with this week's edition of I Ask, They Answer. Now for my producer, Lee Delapina, in our Lexington studios, for Chauncey handling all of our social media, I'm Mike Penna. If you missed any of the show, head over to our website, horseracingradio.net, and check out the podcast at your leisure. We'll talk to you next week. In the meantime, go Steelers.